On this episode of Podigious,
it explored the depth of the fact that he has no depth.
Aren't we all partially a minus one?
No, we aren't.
Like, and they were home video games too. Like, it wasn't like arcade games.
You're not an arcade game. So tell us more about the character development of this butt. There are not a million points of light. There are 80. I counted.
We don't condone being Jeff to anyone. Don't try this at home. What do you mean it came out of nowhere?
That's not true.
It came out of everywhere.
I'm just going to finish the general sentiment I see on the internet about this. It's not my own.
All right.
Well, you're all wrong, internet.
God, what has this podcast become?
I need your password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
Podigious.
Welcome to Podigious, episode 210, Only 80 Points of Light.
Adventure 02, episodes 46 to 50.
Digi-destined privilege, illusion, delusion, dreams and wishes, inherited wills, much ado about epilogue, the cost of ambition, and resolution execution.
Recorded March 1st, 2015.
I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by Ashton McDonald.
That's me.
Ashton Softman. Currently laughing.
I can't deal.
And Andrew Softman.
Hi.
This episode of Podigious is brought to you by JAXA, the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency. Committed to the cause of elevating music quality worldwide, JAXA is opening their lunar astronaut program to all crappy guitarists. If you want to bypass rigorous studying, interviewing, and training, just send a tape of your laughably bad performances. JAXA promises to send all terrible musicians on special missions to the moon. JAXA is not responsible if such missions result in astronauts stranded to die on Mars. JAXA, it's the NASA of anime! F you, Ashley.
No.
No. You're not playing along. So, okay, so we're here with follow-up, and first off, we have some announcements for the podcast, and the first of which is that we have stickers! Yay, stickers! Yay. So we got some printed, and what we're going to do is offer them for free, occasionally, a couple each episode, or we haven't figured out exactly how we're going to deal them all out. But for now, for this episode, the first five people who send us an email at podigious@gmail.com with their mailing address will try to send them to you. We're not exactly sure how we're going to handle international shipping, so it depends. If you're in a country far away from the U.S., it might not be able to if it's exorbitant shipping rates. But if it's reasonable, then we'll do it. But yeah, so the first five people will get a free sticker for this episode. First five people email after this episode goes live with their mailing address will get free stickers. So, yay! We put a picture on social media with what they look like, so you can look
you
on.
You can judge.
Yeah, you can look on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, see that.
It's basically a logo as a sticker, though.
It's Chibomon being all chibi. Also, I was on an episode of Digipodify with our friends Danielle and Adam, and was talking about the tail end of the Myotismon arc with Wizardmon's death and Venomotismon, those three episodes. And you can see that at digipodify.com, and it's episode 13. And so, yeah, in the last couple episodes, I mentioned a desire and plan to have episodes released on an accelerated schedule before Tryers in what was and is still kind of expected to be April. And it's becoming increasingly possible that it won't actually air in April, since we still don't have a premiere date. And I'm checking now the rest of the spring anime chart. That seems abnormal. I think there are two other shows that don't have a premiere date, and I don't know enough about Toei or their history to know if this is really outside the norm, if this is, you know, something to be worried about, or how likely or possible it is for shows like this to air outside the normal release schedule, the normal anime spring April 1st-ish premiere date, you know, if it could air in May, if that's crazy. I kind of think that is bizarre for it to be off sync from the normal schedule, but I don't know, like, maybe Toei has a precedent for this. Anyway, we're going to be releasing episodes. We're going to continue at a once-a-week pace, which means that Try might start in a week and a half when April starts, and we might still be releasing 0-2 episodes while Try is going on. But if it happens, oh well. I mean, it's not that big of a deal.
Can't it just start later in April, though? Like,
but then it would be totally off kilter. Like, most things start within the same week. So it's like, and nothing said April. Nothing has said April. They just said spring 2015, almost a year ago. And don't know if it's actually updated. I don't know if any of the newer innovations come out, have they actually said spring again. But I mean, I keep thinking, like, oh, it has to be spring, because, like, Adventure and Zero Two both aired in spring, and they both, like, Zero Two put a lot of emphasis on following the airing dates in the timeline of the show, and, you know, this is going to be, like, it would make so much sense for this to follow the school year, but also, like, so little of, which, as far as we know, basically none of the production team is the same as 15 years ago, so, like, expecting them to keep the same values in mind and, like, have the same desire to focus on that seems kind of silly. I shouldn't really expect that. And, yeah, so since we're not on the Excel release schedule, we're just going to be doing once a week. So keep sending us your favorite moments from the show, from season two, but you have until April 10th to send them now. If you already send us your favorite clips, send us when there are more, because this episode's really good. So hopefully we'll have more favorite moments in this episode. And Digimon news, we don't have any, because, yeah. but the one thing I wanted to mention was that Fizzing Wizard on Tumblr mentioned that in the very bottom of the V-Jump, so V-Jump magazine, in the V-Jump magazine, since our last discussion of news, included the try poster that was online, and with no real new information about it, except there's this tiny bit that's covered up by most of the watermarks that's been distributed, that I saw one person on Tumblr, Fizzing Wizard, mention that they think what it's saying, and it gets too hard for me to see under the watermarks and stuff, that they think what they're seeing, what it's saying is that just who could Akari be waving at? And that's the kind of thing that we've, all these details in the poster that we're just like, that's silly. There's nothing to read into that. Like, there's no reason. Like, this is just a silly promotional poster. These details aren't thought through. And I'm like, well, if this is actually an intended message, like, is there actually some meaning to who Akari could be waving at? That is intriguing.
Doesn't look like she's actually waving.
Oh, she's totes waving. I mean, what else is she? Okay, if she's not waving, what is she doing? Just being like, I'm a girl!
Enjoying the wind. What I don't like about this poster is that none of them are doing anything that is congruous with what the others are doing.
Because they're all individual people, Ashley.
It, like, really pisses me off.
Because, Ashley, it's the distinction between Adventure and Zero Two. Adventure is all about these individuals and...
No.
Yeah, it does seem they all are in their own little worlds. Not too much, though. There were no new iTunes reviews this week, but we're going to read an old review. This one is from BH Bravo 87 in the USA on May 21st, 2014. And so the original title they gave was Fun, Well-Delivered Podcast. And the contents were, I really like the perspective you guys bring to the show. My fave cast on the subject. Great work. And so now, translated back and forth between 43 different languages, Offered to the Network is the title. And the subject, the contents are, if this post is a part of the effect on the market, capture your favorite things. Good job.
And capture your favorite things.
We need to note for the audience that the initial message was my favorite cast on the subject with one exclamation point. Reasonable. The translation is capture your favorite things with 6 exclamation points. Like, how do the exclamation points pile up in translation? Like, so bizarre. So thanks to everyone who left comments this week. Tali's, Hey Digimon, Stephen Patmore, Pola Bear, Dot Yawning, Alex and Shell, Digital X, John Summers, Ocelot, Jamal Payne, Yoshiman 400, Kari My Favorite, Nan, Martin Papa Postolo, Peter, and Empire Will. On to specific comments. Tali sent us a really interesting email talking about his experience as a Brazilian listener and who grew up watching the Brazilian dub, which is much more in line with the Japanese version of the show, and checking out the English dub and kind of being blown away by how much is different. And he mentions the soundtrack in the English version being totally more Disney-fied and not really capturing the moodiness and the insert songs of the Japanese. And yeah, I miss the Japanese songs sometimes. But the other thing they mentioned is they sent us a YouTube video of the Brazilian... He mentions it being the Brazilian opening, but I can't accept this is actually the opening for every episode. Like, it's, so it, How did they describe it? Our opening had Angelica, one of our TV Kids presenters, floating and dancing around the clip. It was hilarious. And yeah, it's definitely hilarious. You should.
I didn't actually watch it.
We'll have a link in our show notes to this YouTube video.
Please give me a taste of what this is like.
Yes, so Ashley just watched the video live, and yeah, it's very worthwhile. You should check it out.
This is like all I'm going to know about Brazil now.
And the next comment was actually from about episode 208 from Hey Digimon, and they mentioned their Mexican perspective, and they thought that the way that they portray the Mexicans in that arc, which is the World Tour arc, wasn't really negative, or they weren't annoyed by it, at least, aside from the naming of the Japanese names, which, yeah, seems to be a common thread, was Derek named Dingo? Was that
Dingo?
That's not like insensitive. That's just like
nobody would name their child Dingo.
And it's like a ridiculous caricature of Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're pointing out that like one of the kids' names in Mexico is Chicos. But they mentioned that the way they portrayed Mexicans is actually positive, and like even though they showed them being super violent with a gun, that in Mexico, in reality, they would have, you know, Jose Janai would have been shot, because Mexicans are no nonsense people. And now on to feedback on episode 209, Invasion of the Dangling Plot Threads. So the first comment came from Dot Yawning on Reddit, and was pointing out our confusion about Marine Angemon, and how the name is kind of, combining it with Angemon is kind of a weird combination, because it's named after an animal called a sea angel. So they kind of just, you know, made it an Angemon because of that, and then added the Holy Ring to kind of, like, fit him into the Angemon family, or the Holy Digimon family. I'm looking now at a picture of sea angels, and oh my god, how creepy. So they're swimming sea slugs. Ugh, gross. They have, like, wings. Ugh. Why would you ever want a Digimon after that? Ugh. Yeah. So the next comment is from John Summers, and is less comment, more extremely thorough essay, detailing a rewrite of 02 scenario, or fan fiction scenario.
You finally design. Wrote us fan fiction.
it's fan fiction scenario. It's not actually.
Right, get on it.
So they basically spot out this proposed rewrite of 02. It's similar in a lot of ways to what the EGAD Samuel Gray video. He proposed a similar rewrite, but this is different in a couple ways. It cuts out Myotismon and focuses on Daemon and Dagomon more, and also focuses on the rise of Digimon Emperor's power instead of just showing him in medias res, which is an interesting take. It's interesting. You should totally check it out. I'll have a link to all these feedback things mentioned in the comments, in the show notes. So the next piece of feedback is from Ocelot Shmalpahin, and the point that I wanted to discuss on the show is something that they mentioned. So they mentioned that Japan itself has downtrodden and has, you know, issues of representation and diversity that could be tackled even without the whole world tour situation. This is continuing the thread of our discussion of diversity from the world tour. And the thing that they mentioned that I found really interesting and did not know at all, so they mentioned the Ainu, which is a ethnic group I knew nothing about. And they mentioned that Shaman King had an Ainu main character, and I was like, what? I saw Shaman King. How did I know about this? So I did a little bit of research into the Ainu and Shaman King, and I'm not going to speak on authority about any of this, because I think it's the kind of thing that to actually know, I'd want to either, like, you know, read a book, watch a documentary, or, like, there's too much information to, I tried to go down the Wikipedia rabbit hole, and without going too deep into the rabbit hole and consuming all of Wikipedia, it didn't seem like there was inconsistent information in a couple of different places. So the Ainu are indigenous people, indigenous to the Hokkaido area of Japan and Russia. And a lot of their culture is disappearing and being suppressed. And there are a lot of... So there's a couple of different articles I'll link to in the show notes. There's the article about the Ainu and about ethnic issues in Japan that are really interesting if you want to read more about it. But yeah, it's been a long time since I actually saw Shaman King and read the beginning of it. It would have been like 7 or 8 years ago. But I totally missed the fact that, so what they're referring to is that, Horohoro, or Trey in the dub, is explicitly referred to as being from the Ainu tribe. they would call it the Ainu tribe. And when I think back, I'm like, all I can really remember about him is that he, like, came from something that had to do with, like, fields of grass or something. There was, like, something about him that, but I don't really remember, like, his, like, him coming from, like, a tribe and, like, talking about persecution or anything like that. And I feel like everyone in Shaman King is kind of represented as being this, like, very traditional, as an outsider, not knowing much about Japanese culture, like, it's hard to distinguish between, like, traditional Japanese culture and this Ainu culture, which is distinct.
What does Horohoro look like again?
He's on the snowboard.
Yeah, I think I'm just, like, merging him with... Oh, yeah, I'm totally merging him with, like, the guy from Soul Eater, the Black Star.
Black Star?
Oh. From Soul Eater?
I forgot his name.
Yeah.
And Ocelot also mentioned in his comment, he also linked to Samuel Gray, What the Egads, retrospective at 02, and echoed the complaint that the moment with Ken, the Daemon Core arc, and the Dark Gate and sending Daemon back, that they think that it's nice on the surface. When you dig deeper, it's bad, because they say that it's kind of like these people don't really know what Ken's experiences are like, and it kind of undermines everything Ken's gone through to have these kids be able to empathize with him well. And I totally disagree. I guess we didn't really talk too much about... We talked about the Dark Gate moment, but more in a, like, I expected more, I expected to be more impactful. We didn't really discuss, like, what it really meant from an empathetic standpoint. And I think it's legitimate that, like, Ken having friends supporting him is, like, a major factor in whether he's able to sustain the gate without falling into dark control, whatever, that they are not... I never got the impression that the other kids were supposed to be, like, you know, going through literally the same thing that he is going through, that they were supposed to be, like... I forget what they say in the dub. Maybe they say things that are, like, we know exactly what your pain is like, and...
I don't know.
So, you know, maybe it does... Maybe I'm giving it more credit, but the impression it left was definitely of, like, them just standing by a side. So in last episode, we... I actually forget how much we lingered on it, but I thought I talked a lot about this animation goof, as we called it, where in the middle of the fight between Imperial Demon Fighter Mode and Daemon, that they show Ken and Davis getting sucked into Imperial Demon Dragon Mode in daylight, and then they're just not there in the next shot. And it's just like, what? Like, this, and like, how does this even happen? Like, they just put this footage in the middle of the fight with, like, this is so ridiculous. So, B Brode, can't pronounce anything, apparently. So they reblogged our GIF set of this on Tumblr and pointed out, and so I'll link in the show notes to this, sub versus dub comparison article that they cited. And so the important thing is that in the Japanese version, there's dialogue where they mention that, like, oh, this is, like, Imperial Jamon has a barrier to protect against Daemon's attack, and they're like, this is the same barrier that he used to suck us in as Dragon Mode or whatever. And in the dub, they cut that out, so it just shows footage of them getting sucked up in the Dragon Mode for no reason, and it's not voiced at all, so it's kind of like, looks like it's part of the action. But it actually totally makes sense in Japanese, where they're flashing back to something, which, yeah, kind of takes the steam out of my...
Now you just look silly.
Yeah. And also credit to Nan in our comment section for pointing that out too. And now on to unanswered questions and ridiculous dialogue draft picks from listeners about episode 209, which is the Daemon Core arc. And what happens? It's not the quarter call anymore. We're like to the third.
You guys failed at your rebellion, and now we're on the 76 Winger Games.
Well, technically it's a third. For unanswered questions, thanks to Alex and Shell and Martin for sending in picks. And my pick... this is District Unanswered Questions. My tribute is from Martin, and they said, so we'll have an image in the show notes of this, of the scene they're referring to, but it's when Kari and Ty are conversing in the room at night, or I guess it's Kari's room. No, it's one with the bunk bed. Anyway, it's one of the two rooms, which apparently there are two now instead of season one where there are only one. But anyway, they're in the room, and in the back, like, Gatomon and Agumon are just there hanging out, and Agumon's, like, sitting in the bunk bed with his head between the railing, but his head is, like, much bigger than the railing itself, so, like, there's no way he could actually get out of it. I tried to be, like, could he, like, when he bends his head, would it, like, no, because, like, no matter where, like, like the part, the bulge of his head that is through it is like much bigger than the, there's no way. It makes no sense. It's a nice shot though. But if you think about any logic, yeah. And it was always in episode 43.
My tribute is Alex Michelle. And
what? No, your tribute is not, your tribute is from Alex Michelle. And I.
What?
I always think of like the things that we're tributing are the picks, are the unanswered questions.
Oh.
And the Degazzalo effects and like.
Okay.
Not the people.
This is about episode 43. And Alex Michelle says, did you notice that it was okay for Joe to cheer on Ikakuman, but when TK said, go get him, Angemon, he automatically stopped him to worry about people on the boat?
that one was good, too. Yeah.
Joe's a hypocrite, and I don't know why Asher likes that person.
And from District Ridiculous Dialogue Draft, we had picks from Alex Michelle on Reddit and Cars My Favorite and Martin. And so my pick... my tribute to send to the games is Skull Sadamon saying,
need to catch a bus, or maybe I should just drop the subject.
Ha ha ha, because he's gonna drop the bus.
Yeah, no. Mine is from Martin in episode 44. I guess it's at the end when Davis tries to, no, it's in the beginning, when Davis tries to like run after the bus.
Stop, you kidnappers! Should have done those extra labs in PE.
Damn straight.
No, inconsistent with Davis's character.
Also, he would have done those extra labs in PE.
No, he's like he's athletic. Anyway,
he's not gonna catch a bus or a truck.
Oh, it wasn't a. Oh, it was a truck. Okay, I thought you were talking like the bus and.
No, Skull he was Sadamon. Chasing after Oikawa.
Okay, the
after
truck.
They,
okay,
like kidnapped.
Right, right. And when you're talking about the bus, I thought it was like the Skull Sadamon dropping the bus thing, and I was like. That doesn't seem like it'd be too hard to catch. Like, well, I mean, he couldn't physically catch it, but... Okay, so who wins these Hunger Games?
The Agumon question is very good.
The head?
Yeah.
You need to check out our show notes to see the image, though. So now on to the results of Ridiculous Dialogue Draft poll about from episode 209. The number
destroyed
one...
destroyed you.
Yes, the number one pick by far was Ashley's quote about the mute button. Ty wishing Davis had a mute button. And second place, though, was me. And Dave's comment about Joe's brother and being like, but you're Joe's brother, but you're cool.
That was a pretty good one, too.
And so last episode, it was, I think, the first one we've done with a poll where we actually only had one pick per person. So the host breakdown is the same as the pick breakdown. But so Ashley was first, I was second, Andrew was third, and Ashley was fourth. Because nobody likes Asher.
Apparently. Yeah, nobody likes
And so as you mentioned before, we're not on the Accelerated release schedule anymore. It's back to once a week. And so that means that you, if you want to have feedback included in the next episode, 211, you should send it to us by Sunday, March 29th. And if you want to get in your favorite clips for us to include in our retrospective episode, the end of 02, then you need to send them in. We have about 2.5 weeks for that from the time this comes out. So it needs to be in by April 10th. We pick up after the kids slam a door in Daemon's face and pretend he doesn't exist anymore.
In episode 46, Duel of the War Greymon, Oikawa gets a vacation house in Mount Fuji, but Emo War Greymon crashes the party to research his family tree. Original War Greymon defends the kidnapper, and the two War Greymons face off in an explosion of fan service.
In episode 47, Black War Greymon's Destiny, Cody comes out of the Digimon closet to his grandpa, who tells him that it's just a phase that his dad went through too. The kids stalk a bunch of kids who've been implanted with devices that make them act like teenagers. Oikawa harvests a puberty flower from Jerry from Tamers, and then Black War Greymon sacrifices himself to prevent exactly what happens 2 episodes later.
In episode 48, Oikawa's shame, everyone gathers on a bridge to demand answers about the season's convoluted plot. Creepy old guy becomes tragic creepy old guy when he accidentally opens a portal to Picasso Land, and third time's the charm, Myotismon reveals he was possessing him.
In episode 49, The Last Temptation of the Digidestined, come on, you cheated best out of five, Myotismon, sends the kids into illusions where they're tempted with their deepest pettiness, but Davis isn't affected because the writers forgot to write a character arc for him. Davis saves everyone, and then they team up on this better be his final form, Myotismon, with a Digivolution party, but forget to invite Magnemon because no one remembers to invite Magmon.
In episode 50, A Million Points of Light, Myotismon 3.0 covers both worlds in darkness, but forgets that all of his opponents are equipped with really bright flashlights. It starts raining Digidestined, Oikawa sacrifices himself to become the digital world's new lamination, A Davis destroys Malamaya Usman with his love for ramen. The epilogue then murders your hopes and dreams by marauding all your favorite ships and sinking them to the bottom of the ocean.
So, favorites?
I don't have a favorite episode this time, because I couldn't decide.
Because they were all so good.
I do. My favorite episode is...
Is it 49?
It is 49!
Woo, 49!
49!
49ers. Are we playing bingo or something?
Bingo!
Oh god, we should have a bingo... Oh god, it sounds like people could play bingo of pottages with, like, interesting...
I play that game every time and I just don't tell you guys. I keep count.
We could have different squares for, like, Jeff says interesting or Ashley says interesting or Jeff says
no,
weird.
It's only Jeff says interesting.
Yeah. Asher and I have had interesting more kicked out of us than you.
It's true.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh.
Episode 49 was the best.
Yeah, so why episode 49?
Because everything about episode 49.
That was the one with the budget, right?
Yeah, it was the one with the budget. It had the best animation.
Oh, it was a Takeda episode. Yoshihiro Takeda, yeah.
And, like, it had the most emotional impact. It had the most emotional depth into all the characters.
Except Davis. No.
Even Davis. It explored the depth of the fact that he has no depth.
It's true.
Which is great. I'm glad they finally, like, came to terms about that and stopped shoving stuff at him that didn't make any sense. Thank you, the rest of O2. And, like, it is the best, period. The end. Like, does anybody have a counter-argument?
I mean, I didn't consider it a candidate for my favorite episode just because... just because I felt that a lot of the illusions were weak, which we'll get to later.
Really?
A lot of people who consider them, like, extremely weak, they're all terrible, and, like, I'm not anywhere near that bad, in my opinion of it, but it definitely didn't leave a favorite episode taste in my mouth because of it.
Well, maybe I've thought about those illusions too much, and have assigned certain things to them that aren't actually there.
And I guess if I had to, especially this arc, I think, was one of the strongest times where I could, while watching, remember the emotions I had watching as a kid and not feel them at all now. I don't know if that makes sense. Like,
really?
Seeing the all the evolutions laid out, like, in that one pan shot. Like, I remember, like, being so enthralled by that and, like, the whole moment being, like, super memorable and, like, being a big deal to me. And this time I was just like, whatevs. It lasts, like, 5 seconds. It's more digivolutions than it is actual fight.
Yeah.
So, and it's weird because I feel like, as a kid, I, like, latched on to anything I could, and, like, especially because it was, like, we had, as opposed to the Japanese airing, let me look at the Japanese airing, but at least in the U.S., we had a whole summer between Adventure Zero 2 and Tamers, so I remember, like, going away to summer camp and, like, having that whole, like, final battle, like, in my mind as, like, oh, that was so cool, I can't wait for the next thing, and, yeah.
Damn straight, you couldn't wait for the next thing.
Actually, for some reason, I was looking at the Japanese version of on Netflix of the last episode, and there's, at the end of the episode, a teaser for Tamers. Like, it's like a commercial in the episode. Bizarre. Which is even worse than the Netflix being like, do you want to watch the next episode? Watch Tamers. Come on.
Such a tease, Netflix.
Yeah. In Japan, Zero Two and Tamers aired a week apart.
Well, yeah, that's true about any Toei TV show.
Anyway, back to favorites. Andrew, I don't think you mentioned, did you have a favorite episode?
I'm trying to think. I watched it, like, last week.
49.
It's not a bet, Ashley.
49.
49.
There you have it. It's 49.
Okay. So I had a couple of favorite moments that I couldn't really narrow down. So I have three and I couldn't really eliminate any of them.
Please tell us.
So the first one was episode 46. If I just say episode 46, can you guess what it is?
Things happened in episode 46?
Is that the first one?
Yeah.
I don't know. When they talk to Black Widow Mon finally.
Yes.
When they talk to Black Widow Mon finally. No.
Yes, but specifically Wormmon just like...
Oh!
I don't even know how to describe it. Just Wormmon like tearing into him. Just like,
yeah, it was
you
great.
Are being so
mean.
Stupid.
Because Wormmon's the only Digimon there who has died, also. And Blackboard Grandma's like, I was hoping you'd destroy me. And Wormmon was like, what?
Wormmon's like, don't you have anything better to do with your life?
Yeah, he was great. I love Wormmon.
Oh, Wormmon.
At the same time, it seemed mean to me because it's like, you don't just walk up to depressed people and be like, don't you have something better to do with your life? Like, of course they have something better to do with their life. They just, gosh.
Yeah, it, I mean, Black Hole Greymon's thoughts were very reminiscent of suicidal thoughts. And I did not feel like that was actually how you should approach someone who's having suicidal thoughts at all.
No, but it also, that whole episode felt very out of character for Black Hole Greymon.
His character basically totally changed from when we last saw him.
Yeah.
Which is justifiable. I mean, we haven't seen him for a while. He's been doing soul searching. He changed his mind. He changed his thoughts after meeting Azulamon, so.
Well, it felt like he went back to what he was at the beginning, which is why I was, like, very confused.
I don't think it's quite the same, but it was definitely, like, similar.
It's not quite the same, but it's also just, like, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like, we need a bad guy for some reason, and we're gonna make it Black War Greymon because he needs to be here for the next episode.
Also needs to be in Mount Fuji because Mount Fuji looks cool. okay, and my next one, the next two were in episode 47, so it's not enough to narrow down. So it was the, like, brief second where Oikawa and Cody's grandpa almost get along before Myotismon's ghost steps in, and it's like, no, you're not going to have friends. And the last one, it was right after that when Black Hole Greymon sees Myotismon and is like, oh shit, guys. Like, but so this is a caveat, because it makes no logical sense. There is no
way. Why does he know?
Exactly. Yeah. There's no way that Black Hole Greymon would know who Myotismon is or care, or even care about him, like, destroying the digital world, because it's like,
that's what Black Hole Greymon's been doing.
Yeah, and so on many levels it makes no sense, but I'm like, ignoring those things, setting up the tension of someone, like, recognizing who it is and then not telling everyone for two episodes and just being like, oh god, you do not want to let him get back there. Like,
I am just so disappointed by Black Hole Greymon.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
It probably doesn't help his depression that you're so disappointed by him.
Wow.
Trying, Black Hole Greymon.
He's trying too.
My rationale for Black Hole Greymon knowing Myotismon is that Myotismon's reputation is just that. That impressive. I mean, Black Hole Greymon shouldn't know anything. Why does he know how to talk? So, I accept this.
No, because other Digimon made from control spires weren't able to talk, so why can Black Hole Greymon?
I assume there's, like, a certain level of
data.
Level, and then, data becomes sentient, and, I mean, so it is, I presume that he's programmed with some things because he just is data. So, like, it could be, like, you know, random bits of data about the world that he gathered.
Yeah.
But he certainly, in every other aspect, seems to be completely uncultured, and is like, what is life? What is friend? Where is heart?
Right. Well, I would also point out that the Digimon that defeated Myotismon was War Greymon. And since Black War Greymon sort of indirectly came from Myotismon, that could be the nature of the recognition, I guess. Like,
it seems like a stretch.
It's a stretch.
Because it's like two layers of them not knowing where he came. It's like, I wanted, like, he finds out he came from Oikawa and then finds out that that's actually, like, being influenced by Myotismon. So it's like several layers of not knowing where he came from to know that it's,
But I mean, the DNA that became Arukenimon and Mummymon came from Oikawa after Mummymon, or after Myotismon possessed him. So it is partially
true.
Myotismon.
Aren't we all partially Myotismon?
No.
No.
No, we aren't. Yes.
Did anyone else have favorite moments?
My favorite moment was Cody's illusion of his dad and Armadillo Mon's face. It made me really sad. Yeah.
It was really upsetting. It's really upsetting.
I was like, this is the saddest thing.
Of course, that's Ashley's favorite moment, is the saddest thing.
The saddest thing is always going to be my favorite moment.
So I couldn't tell if his dad's face was supposed to look super fake because, like, that's just the design, or because he's supposed to look not real.
No.
It's because Cody's only ever seen him from that photo.
Yeah.
That's the same face he's got in the photo. In flashbacks from, like, Oikawa, you can actually see he looks like a person with expressions.
Wait, how old is Cody again?
8.
Like 2?
No, he's 8!
How young was his dad? Like, I'm so confused by their ages now.
Wait, so why is that confusing? I assume his dad was, like, 30s.
to imply that there were, like it's set, when's it set? In 2002. And, like, there were video games that his dad already played, but then Cody's 8. Like, it didn't really seem to add up to me.
I'm gonna look up early video games. I feel like there were definitely video games in the 80s.
Like, and they were home video games, too. Like, it wasn't, like, arcade games.
You're not an arcade game.
Well, he was in high school. He was in high school, I think.
In those stops.
Yeah. He was either in middle or high school. He was wearing a gakuran, which is not something, like, an elementary school kid would wear. So he was older than the Digidestined, I'm pretty sure. Because they're all still in elementary school.
So, the first generation of video game consoles began in 1972 with the Magnavox Odyssey. So, he could be 30.
Well, it looked like an NES to me.
Yeah, it didn't look... it looked better than, like, super original video games.
I mean, he was a police officer. And he was a police officer senior enough to be put in, like, in a protection detail on a politician. I really don't know, guys. It's very confusing.
I don't know if that's to do with age. I don't know. Especially in Japan.
When can you become a police officer? Like, relatively young, right?
I don't know in Japan.
Probably in your 20s.
In America, you gotta be, like, you have to be, like, 20 and a half to take the police, test. There's a test.
No, I wouldn't be... I think it's in your 20s, too, so, yeah.
Mm. Anyway.
I think Cody killed his dad.
Wow!
That's your headcanon.
Yeah, he's like a demon boy. Demon child.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Anyway, favorite moments.
We can go on to favorite character if you don't have any.
Well, this isn't a favorite moment so much as I am... I actually teared up when Oikawa died. I was like, no!
That made me a little bit sad, too.
I was like, this is unfair. Oh, God.
It was like he just met his Digimon.
I know.
And then, like, 2 seconds later, died.
And everyone else was crying, and I can't deal with other people being sad about something. That's what gets me.
Yeah.
That was so sad. I'm sure I had, like, actual favorite moments, but I can't think of them now. Oh, no, I do have a favorite moment. It was when, in episode, 48, actually, when, Davis is starting to fight Malomyotismon, and nobody's backing him up, and everyone's scared, and,
Oh, I know what this is.
He's all alone, and then Ken goes and grabs his arm, and his hand is shaking, and Davis is like, dude.
He would say dude, though.
He didn't say that, but he would say that. And I was just like, these kids are so brave. They're 11. Anyway, continue.
I did like that moment. I actually didn't expect them to call it out, and then, at least in the dub, they like explicitly are like, Davis is like, your hand's shaking. I was like, too far.
No, I like that Davis called him out.
He's like, dude, it's okay. I got this.
Yeah.
You're all shaky shake.
It's like, it's okay to be scared. You just gotta keep going.
Davis should have been like, do you have a Polaroid camera? I don't understand. What's going on?
Wow.
Wow, Jeff. I was thinking wow to my own joke, too.
That was... You should cut that one out, too.
Well, personally, I like the moments where, was it Ken and Cody when they confront Noriko?
Yes.
In the park?
Yes.
Or Shrine or wherever that was. Yeah, that's personal.
At least one... Yeah, it was Ken and Cody.
The one where everyone just showed up.
Yeah.
Like, everyone important, I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so favorite character. Let's all just blur out favorite character on the count of three, okay?
What?
Okay, 1, 2, 3.
Oikawa. Black Rayman's butt.
What?
Wait, what did you say, Jeff?
You said Oikawa.
Well, I didn't say anyone's butt. God, what does this podcast become?
I don't know, and I think I want out.
It was always this classy, Jeff. It was always this classy. Don't lie to yourself.
So what's up with this butt?
It's everywhere.
I don't know. It's just so memorizing in this scene. It was like, why is it there? What is happening here? Why is this shot framed like this?
They put a lot of effort into
God.
It.
Oh, God.
They also forgot to draw the, like... Oh, I guess Black Everyone has never had a crest on his back.
Yeah, he doesn't have a crest on his back.
I thought there was some design there, though.
No.
No?
It's always been blank.
Hmm. Just like his heart.
Yes.
He has a heart! Cody told him so!
Did Cody actually tell him that?
I don't remember, actually.
He said he did in the recap, but I was like,
He did. I think he did say that Black War Greymon had a heart. I'm not sure he said it to Black Orc Raymon.
I see.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's been too long.
So tell us more about the character development of this butt.
Well, it gets destroyed and blocks the gate between Heightened View Terrace and the digital world, except it fails epically. Black Orc Raymon, how can you fail to check the gate with that butt?
So Black Orc Raymon becomes a chastity belt for the digital world.
Oh my god, Andrew, why did you go there?
Oh, yes. God.
You're welcome.
Things I never wanted to hear from my little brother, like, Christ.
This is a new low for this podcast, actually. You've gone very, very low.
You're welcome.
You know, it's also low butts.
Exactly. Shake your butt.
No,
Backward
no.
Raymon. So who are all your favorite characters? They can't be better than Black Orc Raymon's butt.
I guess we're all about that base.
Well, I can't top that. I certainly couldn't top that.
I mean, yeah, I don't have anything to say about Oikawa that's going to top the butt.
My favorite character was the fact that there are suddenly two, there are finally the two Kido brothers are in the same shot, and the dubbers couldn't make an excuse about that.
They just don't say anything about it. Just like
there's a new Kido all of a sudden.
It's quiet. If we're just quiet, no one will notice.
There's a new brother.
Wait, what?
Who looks identical to the old one?
So you know how the dub pretends that there's only one, that Joe only has one older brother?
Well, oh yeah.
The two of them showed up at the same time to the summer camp gate.
Well, so I think what they did. So I think the one that was primarily the only one that was in last season was not featured in this season until that shot.
Yeah, I think so.
So like they kind of in the dub passed it off as him aging to look different, but actually like he didn't change that much, and there's actually a new character.
Guys, I know what happened. The brother went to the world with him, with everyone else.
To the wish world?
The wish world, and then he multiplied.
as his old form. Season 1 form.
Joe's brother is a Digimon.
You're right.
The dub is like, I don't care if you notice this, whatever.
Yeah. What? For some reason, that thought like reminded me very vividly of some other media thing, and I can't place what it is. Was.
We can't help you, Jeff.
I don't know. Okay.
I mean, maybe staring at the shadows on Black Orc Raymon's butt will help you remember, because, like, what is happening in this shot? Just don't understand.
this was like one of the poorly animated episodes, right? Like,
what episode is this? This is 47?
6, I believe. Oh, sorry, yeah, 47. 46 is the one that was terribly animated. I think 47 was like okay.
Yeah, 47 was okay, I think. Yeah.
So at least they didn't use all their budget on the butt. Oh, we need to move on. We need to get over this butt.
It's never happening.
I don't know if we can even tell them to link it in the show notes, because we need to keep the show notes safe for work.
What? Do this we? Picture's totally safe for work. Come on.
So I think we mentioned, I can't remember last time we recorded, anyway, that the last arc was the first arc to not have credited, would not be, the not have episodes credited to Jeff Nimoy and Bob Buchholz. And I don't remember really noticing that much in the last arc, but it's like totally noticeable here. I feel like these episodes just like didn't have, had like barely any humor whatsoever. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
But again, it's hard to tell if that's because the nature of the episodes is supposed to be much more dark and epic.
Yeah, that too.
Or if it's because of that.
Mm. I feel like maybe I was reading so much more into it because I knew of this transition, but I feel like they still tried to make jokes and they just weren't funny at all. Like,
it's true that a lot of the jokes were not as good.
They made fewer jokes, yeah.
Mm.
And they overused the word willies a lot.
I noticed that.
Really?
Yes. I think they were trying to make a joke about, like, around, they were trying to make a running gag through that episode.
Mm-hmm.
It was across multiple episodes.
They said it 3 times. Across 2 episodes, maybe.
Something like that.
I do not remember that.
They said it at least 3 times.
Yeah.
And across more than one episode.
the split Digivolution thingy. I don't know how you say, like, the everyone getting digivolved to every form. That was cool. I mean, it was a cool way to basically pay homage to, like, the gimmick for the season, which was to have lots of branching different Digivolutions that, you know, if they could all just go into one form, you wouldn't get a send-off to all those different characters and designs. That was cool.
I was confused. When Gatomon digivolved to Angelmon and Nefertimon, did she also stay Gatomon? She was champion? Because then she DNA digivolves with Ankylomon.
No, with Ankylomon. You mean with... Aquilamon.
Aquilamon.
Yeah. Yes. I didn't think about that. Right, so... Actually, I have an image of the... I basically took that pan shot and stitched together into one wide shot. Because, like, that shot was so iconic in my childhood, so I was like, let me try to stitch it together so we can see if the rookies slash Gatomon, because she's the one champion, if they're actually in it. Yeah, they are. Gatomon's in the bottom left. So, like, I think every time they digivolved, they kept their base form, too.
Oh.
Yep.
Now, the question is, which one's the real one?
The most powerful. The most powerful ended up being the real one.
Shikumon is really more powerful than Magnangemon.
Oh, you got a point there. But Shikumon is the most powerful of Armadillomon, so they couldn't have both.
Yeah, it would have been awkward to be like, Armadillomon, you're kicked out.
The logistics of this is so confusing.
Yeah. I mean, the Magnangemon thing is, as we think about it a little more, it's like, that doesn't... The same with Angelmon, like, you can't really compare Angelmon.
Yeah, I think Angelmon is stronger than Sylphimon.
Yeah. Although, Sylphimon killed Lady Devimon.
It's true.
Whereas Angelmon killed Myotismon. I guess Myotismon would be stronger.
Well, the thing is...
Kind of, with everyone else.
Well, yeah. Sylphimon also caught Lady Devimon off guard, because her back was turned.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, Sylphimon was getting owned.
And then again, Angelmon did not actually kill Myotismon.
Really? I thought he was gone for good.
He's the gift that just keeps giving, guys.
Ooh, that I should have used that. I couldn't think, like, after like four different names for Myotismon, I couldn't think of any more. The gift that keeps on giving Myotismon.
Well, they came up with four different names for Myotismon, too.
It's true.
Adorable.
I never, only on this rewatch, did I make the connection between Oikawa turning into butterflies and the name, the Japanese song for the first season, Butterfly.
Deep.
Wow.
Sorry, Ash. I mean.
That's all I have to say. That's all I have to say.
So obvious to you.
Again, Ash doesn't do things at the ground level.
Wait, but if it's deep, so you mean like he goes below the ground level? Or above?
It's more above.
It's more.
He just can't be on ground level.
I just I can't. It's impossible.
I can't even ground.
Exactly.
So the last episode title is A Million Points of Light.
It's my favorite.
But did you know what the title's a reference to?
I forget. I knew this at one point.
It's a phrase that...
it's a phrase?
Yeah, so the episode 49, which was The Last Temptation of the Digidestined, that is a reference to a novel and film, which is...
Right, The Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah, but the A Million Points of Light is a reference to a phrase, A Thousand Points of Light, which was something that George H.W. Bush used to say.
Really?
In reference to what?
Apparently it was like the idea of like charities all banding together to do good in the world. So.
Okay.
It's kind of a bizarre reference, yeah. Also, I was going to leave this for unanswered questions. There are not a million points of light. There are 80. I counted.
You counted? Are you serious?
Yeah.
It wasn't that hard to count. I mean, it's only 80. I counted one side, there were 40. So I doubled.
This is how Jeffrey spends his time, audience.
This is what... Yeah.
I have no words.
We don't condone being Jeff. To anyone. Don't try this at home.
So I didn't count the points, I counted the lines.
Don't try this at home, kids.
Don't you have something better to do with your life, Jeff?
Okay, so I was, my mind was blown by this observation. It's gonna blow him. Okay, so
it's not
the season one climax when they lost their digivices and, you know, like, they were able to...
Their digivices? You mean their crests, right?
No, your crests. Yeah, the crests. Yeah. So when they lost their crests, they found their crests within each other and banded together with friendship to realize, you know, it was all about, like, friendship and what they find their own attributes in each other. And anyway, it's about friendship. Season 2 climax, all about depression and, you know, like despair versus hope. It's very Danganronpa, but anyway. And about having hope in the face of darkness and despair, which is very much TK's crest of hope compared to season 1 climax of Matt's crest of friendship.
I will challenge you. I will challenge you on this, on what season 2's climax is about.
Mm.
Slightly.
So, the gate to Hikarigaoka, or Heightened View Terrace. There's a lot of speculation around this, and it is a a complex subject. Because the show, at least the dub, I don't know about Japanese, we don't watch the Japanese, explicitly implies, is that even a thing? Like,
no.
Either explicit or implies. So,
yeah.
It directly implies that Oikawa tried to open a gate to the digital world, and ricocheted because of Black Orgamon sealing the gate,
yes.
And ended up in this Picasso world.
Yes.
Yes.
But a common theory, which I don't know where it originated from, but in Hope Chapman's video reviews, she mentioned that she couldn't find any other references to it. So I'm not sure if she actually originated it or if it was latent in other areas she hadn't found. But idea is that the cards that Oikawa lays out to open the portal are the same cards that Tai lays out to go from Myersman's castle.
They are.
Except for the one card that Tai makes decision about, which is the
Agumon versus Gomamon. Yeah.
Right. And Oikawa uses the other one.
Yeah.
And so this theory goes that that's why they go to a different world, because they didn't use the right card.
Well, what I would say to that is it was on purpose that it was the wrong card on the part of the people writing the show. And, like, Oikawa/Myersman didn't realize he was putting the wrong card down because Black War Greymon fixed the game.
So I disagree with this theory, because if Myotismon, well, it depends how much we think the Myotismon is controlling Oikawa versus, like, explicitly controlling in certain times, or if it's just subtle influence, or if it's actually explicitly controlling all the time. But in any case, like, Myotismon should know which card to use to go correct way.
I think he does. He does. And that's why...
Or he forgot.
That seems weird to, like, assume that he forgot.
I guess. But I think he'd remember.
So Ash, your theory is that he used what was the correct card and it went to the wrong place because of...
No. Black Orgamon. He thought he used the correct card, but in placing the card, it changed because of Black War Greymon.
Oh, so you think, like, he meant to place Gomamon, but
yes.
It displayed as Agumon.
Yes.
Huh. I had never... So the reason I take issue with this theory is that what we saw... We did not see this in the first season. What we saw was Tai and Ko going from Myotismon's castle to the other digital gate. We did not see going from Heightened View Terrace or Hikarigaoka to the digital world.
Right.
So it went to a completely different gate and in the other direction. So...
Right. Yeah, which is weird.
So, like, it could just be a totally different card. Like,
but then why are all the other cards the same also?
It could just be like that's like the layout that works. What, like, it could, like, you know, like, it's feasible that all of them are the same except for that one card, you know? It's possible.
I guess.
I'm just saying, like, everyone's like, oh, that's exactly as before. I'm like, no, it's a different gate going the other direction. It's not the same thing.
I never figured the gate was the question. It was where they're going, like which world they're choosing.
But I mean, from Myotismon's castle, Myotismon ended up in Hikarigaoka or Heavy Terrace.
Yeah.
And they ended up in a different... So, like, they used a different combination of cards to go to a different place in the real world.
I thought they used the same cards.
They didn't show Myotismon. They showed him just placing cards face down.
Yeah, okay.
So it's unclear what Myotismon used.
I thought he left the cards behind. So they only had the same cards to work with.
Hmm. Could have been rearranged differently.
The setup in the thing was like, these 8 cards, these are the only answers for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Gomamon Agumon thing.
Right. So it's possible that, you know, putting down Gomamon goes to the campsite, putting down Agumon goes to Kaigaoka. You know, like, there are just so many variables.
No, because putting down Agumon takes you to Picasso World.
Maybe because of Black Orgamon sealing the gate.
I see.
That's what, like, this theory is usually used to say, like, Black Orgamon didn't do anything. I'm like, we don't have enough information to conclude that anywhere near concisely. That's decisively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what I was trying to get to by roundabout this whole discussion is that I was rewatching that episode from season 1, episode 27, to see what cards he placed down, not realizing he places down. They're all face down, so you don't even see. But Motorsman says before he leaves, he's like, I will return triumphantly. And I'm like, well, you did return, kind of. Good job. Eventually.
He took the scenic route.
Took him a couple years. Yeah, went through a human body.
That must have been fun.
So do you guys have opinions about like how much Meritusman was controlling Oikawa or not?
Sure.
I could really not tell.
Yes.
I think you're not supposed to be able to tell. There's a lot going on in this particular arc about, and in season two in general, about control. We've discussed this before, about who's controlling whom, all the layers it goes back to, but in this arc in particular, the kids are keep on saying, like, you're controlling these dark spore kids. You're controlling them. It's not their fault. And Oikawa's answer is always, they chose this.
Yeah, they seem pretty ignorant about that.
Yeah, like,
they chose it, but he did. I still think he made, like, a false promise
about
what it would do. Yeah. So it's not really a choice.
I mean, I still think there's an element to, like, they didn't fully know the situation they were getting themselves into.
Yeah, no, of course they didn't.
But they knew most of the details. What? And they still wanted, like, you know, they knew it would make them turn into Ken. They didn't know the full, like, how evil Ken was, maybe, but, like...
Yeah.
Seems like an important detail.
I feel like these kids were... I got the impression they were willing to accept those consequences. They may not have, like... I feel like it was the kind of thing they need to experience it to realize how terrible it would be.
Yeah.
And even once they experienced it, they didn't think it was bad until they snapped it, until they got snapped out of it.
Yeah. I think both the kids and Oikawa were in a position where they were in control of their decisions, but they were also influenced by, you know, the outside evil pressures of Meiotismon or Oikawa or whoever it was talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little more complicated for Oikawa because Meiotismon was literally inside of him. it's a little harder to ignore that.
Definitely a moment where it was like, I've broken through Meiotismon's control, and then he like wrests it back and Oikawa becomes like super evil again.
Yeah, in episode 46, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like 47? In this Black Gore Greymon. Oh yeah, 47.
Whatever. Whenever Black Gore, when Grandpa Hito was like, come with me, I'll be your friend. Let's talk about my son.
He was like, I would like that.
Yeah, but then my husband was like, yeah, no.
No.
But at the same time, like, I can believe that Meiotismon and Oikawa in a lot of ways became sort of the same thing, the same entity.
They had a similar goal, especially, so, like, I could see that.
Yeah.
While they're working towards the same goal, kind of, like, expressing that together. I mean, relying on, like, a more symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
Compared to later, where it became not symbiotic.
And Meiotismon became the stronger one of them and was able to break free eventually. But, like, Meiotismon was nothing when Oikawa let him in. And...
He was fog. He was pretty good at being fog.
Okay. Great. He was fog. I stand corrected. But, like, he fed on Oikawa's darkness that was already there. So I would say that what became Mallow Meiotismon is not just Mallow Meiotismon. It's not just Meiotismon. It's also what Oikawa was feeding him all along.
Well, I mean, also, like, the form we call Mallow Meiotismon is also the darkness from the kids, too.
Yes.
So there's that multiple too. Layers. But yeah, that is interesting to think that, like, especially, like, they... Actually, it was during Adventures, like, they lived together in the same body for a while. So I see a lot of that transferring.
It's been... 3 or 4 years, depending on what timeline you say.
Well, no. So I guess in the dub, they used to say 4 years. Now they say 3 years. So it's kind of converged to the Japanese timeline.
It's so confusing.
It's really confusing.
Although the Japanese version used to say 2.5 years and now says 3. And that is consistent because time has passed.
Because time passed, yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Except in the dub, where time went backwards.
Time.
It was frustrating how much the kids don't get that. Like, they repeat so many times that the kids are being controlled. And it's like, it's more subtle than that. You never learned the lesson that they weren't being controlled, but it was resolved, so I guess it's okay.
They were being manipulated, but not controlled. I'd agree. But, you know, the kids are 11. So, whatever.
Or less.
Not an excuse.
I don't expect them to get it. I don't expect the kids to get it. I expected Ken to get it, but Ken never said they were being controlled, did he?
He did. He did at one point. I was like, is this just...
Oh, he did?
Bad writing? Like, is this an accident? Is this a dubism? I don't want to... I don't know if I should read... Like, I even wrote down, like, I don't know if I should read too much into this.
Well, that's fascinating.
I think it's like, when he's confronting the one girl. What's her name?
Noriko?
Noriko, yeah. Slash Jerry.
Are they the same voice? Is that why you keep making that joke?
Yeah.
Okay, because
oh my
they're
God.
Not the same temperament-wise.
Yeah.
Evil girl, all evil girls are the same.
I see.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. I like Noriko's hair. Can I just say that?
I liked when it turned Super Saiyan in
yes.
that one scene.
That was a good style for her.
I tried to, like, screen cap that to, like, use it as in a react thing, but I'm like, it was too subtle to actually understand in just a screenshot, so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I took a screenshot of it being upright, it was just, like, looked like normal hair a little bit, so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So, I've been looking through, so there's this blog that did, I think about 3 years ago, did episodic reviews of Digimon, of the dub. Mm-hmm. And I've been, for the last couple, also trying to read his reviews as I've been watching. And they've been pretty good. The website is like at digimon.firstasian.net. It's called Digimon System Restore. But also interesting is seeing the comments. And there are like a couple comments on each blog post. And it's like random people, whatever. But interesting seeing like a lot of common threads, like a lot of people upset that Dagumon didn't show up. Or I think this is actually the point of the author of these reviews, that like Dagumon would have been a much more fitting final villain, considering the ties to the Dark Ocean with Ken's like Dark Digivice and the control spires and stuff and everything. And I feel conflicted.
I disagree.
Disagree that it should have been Dagumon?
I like that Myotismon came back.
Of course you do.
Well, yeah, of course I do, because he's my favorite villain, but like, yeah, no, sorry, Jeff, you keep going.
Well, I just feel like, this is a sentiment that's expressed a lot, especially in regards to Try, in how, like, people were like, I hope Dagumon comes back, and I feel like I'm, like, being a good horse, but I'm like, Dagumon's strongest element is that he never comes back, and is always on the horizon, and that they're always afraid he's gonna come back.
I'd be okay with him coming back, but not as the main villain.
What I don't want is for him to come back and then be defeated and then be done with him, because that defeats all purpose of him existing.
You're the expert on the lore, so I won't argue.
I am not an expert in anything.
But, like, story-wise within Digimon, like, he affects certain members of the team, and they're the ones with all the light and stuff. And, like, I'm okay with him coming back, just not as the main villain.
Yeah, my major issue with Dagumon is just, I think by having him be in the introduction to the Dark Ocean, it kind of implied that he was, like, master of the Dark Ocean, or, like, tied into, like, the source of these dark powers and stuff. And it's like, I don't see it as that. He's just a dude in the Dark Ocean that's, like, really powerful, could kill everyone one day. you know, like a couple minutes after the ending, at the epilogue, everyone dies, Dagumon comes back, kills everyone. It's possible.
Unless they're on Mars or the moon.
Oh, it's true. That's how Try should start. Everyone's dead except for Matt and Gagumon.
No, he doesn't get up there until he's an adult.
Yeah, like,
Try's in high
they're
school.
They're gonna
Sorry,
be
guys.
In high school. Like, it's not gonna acknowledge.
No, he time travels. He goes back in time to warn them.
Time traveling astronaut Matt. I'm done. Let's do it.
We have an episode title right there.
We haven't even talked about the epilogue.
So anyway, yeah, I think Dagumon is an instance of people having specific expectations for something and then just being disappointed because it didn't mean exactly what they thought it was going to be, and thinking that equates to being bad. Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting thought though, how like in some ways Dagumon does fit neatly into the puzzle piece that is the final boss of the season, but I'm glad he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, because this is according to Digimon Wiki, in the Brazilian dub of episode 47, I don't know if this carries through the other episodes because it was just in the Digimon Wiki article for episode 47, but Mal Myotismon is named Malon Yotismon in the episode title, and then the Digidestin call him Malamyotismon. Gaudamon calls him Myotismon, and he calls himself Belial Vamdemon. So, just every name possible.
Hmm.
Oh, and apparently the Digi Analyzer says that Malamyotismon evolved from Belial Vamdemon. So
this makes no sense to me.
Nothing makes sense to me at all.
Are you saying words?
Malon Yotismon.
Did they just have like
a million different people working on that episode and they all just chose a different name for fun.
That would be funny to, like, you know, like, split up the lines and then...
Don't consult each other.
Well, it sort of makes sense that he's a sort of amalgamation of badness. So, since he's so many different people's badness, he could have a lot of different names.
Stretching it.
Okay.
So, I wanted to talk about Mount Fuji, which is a cool bit of geography we got in this episode, in episode 46.
Oh, we're talking about geography again.
Geography!
It's only one place. And so, my speculation was they go to Mount Fuji because War Greymon was born at the Fuji TV station.
Huh.
What? Wait, like, what?
No comment.
The Fuji TV station, the place in Odaiba, is Fuji TV. So they went to Mount Fuji to fight as War Greymons.
Or they just went away from the city because, you know, it's dangerous.
I actually, this had this unanswered question, but like, why does Oikawa leave? Why does Oikawa go to Mount Fuji? Like, what?
It's so pretty.
It's a very easy place to hide out.
Is it?
Because it's not the city.
Yeah, I guess if he's trying to hide.
Okay, but, like, doesn't it get a lot of tourists?
Yeah.
Well, it's not as, like, crowded.
Yeah, it's not as crowded as the city.
Like, there's a lot of places to hide.
True.
So, something I didn't realize... So, I put in Slack for you guys to all see the image of them on a lake by, like, once... That's where they, like, confront Black Horseman at the end. And I have been trying to find out which lake it is, because there are 5 lakes around Mount Fuji. I have no idea which one it is. Actually, I have some idea now.
You want us to guess?
Yes. I want us to decide which lake it is.
It's all of them.
Are you for real? I don't know, man. It's a lake.
No, so you have to look at the shape of the mountain and decide from the shape of the mountain.
The animated mountain.
I can't estimate the volume of pasta in a Tupperware. Like, you can't expect me to do this.
What does that have to do with anything?
I can't do spatially related challenges.
I think it's not Lake Shoji, personally.
So the 5 lakes are Kawaguchi, Motoso, Sai, Shoji, and Yamanaka. And Shoji.
Are you positive this is Mount Fuji, by the way?
Which, like, in Digimon?
Yeah.
Yeah, they mention it. So Shoji. Okay, so it's not Shoji because the little bump is on the left from the Shoji view, but in Digimon the bump's on the right.
In that case, it might be Yamanaka.
I think it's Kawaguchi because Yamanaka, really? The bump is like pretty high up, and in Kawaguchi, it's farther down to the right.
Bump.
You don't see the bump?
Like on the right side in the Digimon picture, there's like a little tapering bump at the bottom.
I guess I see it.
This is riveting radio. But so the weird thing I learned in looking this up is that I totally missed that the campsite they go to when they're covering for fighting Digimon Emperor is Mount Fuji. Like, they go to actually, for some reason, the Wikimon article for June, of all things, explicitly says that they go to Lake Yamanaka for that episode. So there's no clear shot of Mount Fuji, though, so in that one.
Well, there's only so many places they can go to camp.
I guess so. I didn't really realize, like, Mount Fuji would be a place to camp, though. I didn't really know that was a thing.
Well, Mount Fuji is a place you go hiking, especially for religious purposes.
Make sure to leave a comment letting us know which lake you think it is.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
So seriously, Jeff.
It can't be Sai, because there's, like, stuff in the way from the view of Sai, and...
What if the animators just could not draw Mount Fuji?
That's also possible.
How dare you say that?
Because it looks more pointy to me.
It does look... It's too pointy. It's true.
Maybe there was, like, a volcanic reaction since then? That's not a thing that happens.
I don't think it's active at all.
Yeah. What do you guys think of the dark spores as a metaphor for puberty?
I think that's not what they are.
Wait, puberty causes you to become evil and good at homework?
Yeah. Puberty does not make you good at homework, I will tell you that much.
It's also, they're like, we're gonna leave them in there, and it doesn't matter, because as long as you believe in yourself, it's okay. You don't just retain puberty.
you grow out? I mean, so...
grow out of puberty. Growing out of everything else.
Clearly not every detail fits. Also, puberty is not a flower in your head. That doesn't mean the metaphor can't be valid.
Well, I'm okay with puberty being a flower in your head.
Yeah, no, that makes more sense than anything else.
Yeah,
The flower is the strongest indicator of being metaphor. Flower blooming and stuff. But, I mean, okay, so getting good homework, no, but, like, you do get smarter over time. I mean, maybe not because of puberty.
I'm not buying this.
I think it's the emo-ness. Like, they basically act like moody teenagers.
Not all teenagers are like that.
Are you really going to start the hashtag not all teenagers?
It's a
not all teenagers.
Not all teenagers. No, I'm just, like...
It's not all... But, like, isn't that a stereotype you associate with teenagers? In fiction, at least?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's what matters.
Yes, that's why it's annoying.
But, like, that's not all that they were doing. Like, it wasn't just moodiness. They were, like, viewing other people as insects.
Yeah.
And kicking cats, which they cut out in the dub.
Right. That, too. That's not nice.
You heard it, though.
Oh, really? I missed that. There's just, like, a meow?
Yeah.
Really? I missed that, too.
And Cody reacts to
it. Cody was like, she kicked the cat! Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, Cody totally was like, dude.
It's a new game of kick the can, now you kick cats instead.
That sounds like a really dangerous game, actually. Like, don't do that to a cat.
A cat's gonna come get you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a loose connection, but I like to think of it as being, on some level, a metaphor for puberty, because with that lens, then it be like the parents, especially the parents encouraging them, the kids getting it, it kind of becomes, and this is, I think it's true even without considering it as a metaphor for puberty, so maybe it doesn't even need to be a metaphor for puberty. But anyway, like, it's about the parents trying to, like, force their kids to grow up faster, to, like,
yeah,
you know, to lose their youth, and, like, especially in Japan, there's so much, I can't remember where I heard this, but, I mean, the sentiment I heard is that, basically, like, your elementary years are, like, your golden years, where, like, things are fun, and you like, have fun, and then after that, it's, like, once you go into middle school, it's all, like, cramming for high school. Once you're in high school, you're cramming for college, and then college is, you don't do anything, but, like, but everyone looks back on their elementary school years as, like, well, no, it was, like, apparently college in Japan is, like, much, much easier than in America.
Really?
Well, actually, I can attest to this. Mm-hmm. When I was in Japan, the professor that took us did mention exactly that. Basically, children are allowed to do whatever shit they want, and parents can't really do anything about it. But once you go to middle school and high school, you have to pretty much just buckle down and study.
Mm.
And then when you're in college, you're like, screw this. I'm just going to do whatever I want again, dress however I want, et cetera, et cetera.
Which is weird, like, why... I would think then people would look back on their college years as being their, like, golden years, but what I heard is that elementary school...
Well, not everyone goes to college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought going to college was much harder in Japan.
It is.
Hmm, I see. But yeah, so I can understand, like, these kids that get their exposure are, I assume, in middle school, or elementary school, so...
Yeah, they are.
You know, like, trying to make them forego that, like, that one joyous part of their life they have to be more intelligent, whatever.
I wouldn't say it's a metaphor for puberty so much as it's a specific type of darkness that I think puberty is more susceptible to, or is particularly vulnerable to.
Hmm.
Because it's... You know, it's a rapid exacerbation of the insecurities that they have by looking around them. It begins because they're comparing themselves to Ken, and Ken was comparing himself to Sam. And Sam had the same problem, even if he didn't have a dark spore. And it gets worse because of the feedback they're getting from Oikawa, from their parents, from other people. And, you know, they're trying to get some control over their lives by taking on this power, but it's not their power, so it just makes them even more irritable and insecure, and, like, that's a really bad place to be.
Hmm.
And it comes up a lot, you know, in competitive young areas.
Yeah, I think even without it being someone else's power, like, even if someone goes from where they start off to, you know, being competitive or whatever, like, competing at the level of the people they admired, you still, even if it's through your own power, like, you still lose stuff along the way, which is what it's all about.
Yeah. I don't agree with the general sentiment of power makes you lonely that was coming up in a couple of these episodes, but, like, chasing power does.
Yeah. Mm.
Sad.
I was just gonna say that they were just basically giving up their individuality. Not much to say on it.
I guess they were definitely treated much more like a group once they got their dark spores.
Well, they were kind of like that. We don't know enough about them,
yeah,
I think, to say that.
But yeah, but by getting the dark spores, they were basically giving up what made them unique.
Yeah, they did give up their dreams in order to be Ken, because they thought that's what was expected of them from their parents and from society, celebrating this particular type of person.
I have more to say about dreams, but I like that idea.
We have a whole topic about dreams.
We do have a whole topic.
Oh, I forgot about that. I was kind of annoyed. I'm only bringing this up because Ash loves My Otis Mon so much. like how much Gatomon kept... So I think it started in episode 46. 48. Gatamon's like, when they go to Kairaoka / Hide Your Terrace, they're like, Gatamon's like, this is where I was with my Otismon. That was the worst impression ever. Anyway.
Yeah.
And the first time she mentions my Otismon, I'm like, cool, you're seeing the idea this is going to be my Otismon once it's revealed. Also, like, someone would say that. But then she, like, mentions my, like, it's like they call back to, like, when she worked for my Otismon, like, 10 times in the next episode, next, like, 3 episodes. And I was like, we get it. Yeah, you worked for him. Okay. The reason it frustrated me is because we see no other signs of her being affected by that time. And of her, like, even seeming similar to the character she was before she turned sides in season one. It just seems like cheap writing to ignore all that, sweep it under the rug, and then once Spider-Man comes back, like, mention all the time, like...
I agree.
And it totally makes sense for her to keep mentioning, like, it totally makes sense for, like, Spider-Man coming back to be, like, a big deal for her.
I agree. They did mention it, you know, back in the anniversary episode when Wizardmon showed up.
Mm.
But I think that's sort of... less about bad writing and more about the fact that we don't really focus on the Digimon so much in the show called Digimon. Like, she doesn't actually talk that much.
Should we name the show Kids Who Have Digimon?
Yeah. But, like, you know, she is also an adult and doesn't talk about herself that much in the company of children.
She's a lady.
She's a lady.
Sophisticated lady who's...
She doesn't discuss certain things.
Doesn't reveal her age.
She doesn't, though.
So, there's this constant theme running through this arc of the... and the episodes before, too. Of the Dark Spore children wanting to be special and looking up to Kenichi Joji and wanting to be Digidestined, too. It's not just Ken's outward genius personality. It's also it becomes about a jealousy of the main kids as well. And none of the kids really understand this jealousy. They keep talking about how, like, it's okay, like... they also like keep thinking. They also keep thinking that the kids have been tricked or are being controlled, and they can't understand that they could have wanted Dark Sport because they don't know what it's like to be in a position of just being normal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what this showed me is that knowledge. It's weird how they treat the power they're searching for. These kids is knowledge, which is interesting. You know, like it's not something that's normally seen from. They're not really villains though, because we do still get villains who are like, "Raw, I want power, take over the digital world," aka Motorsman.
Mm-hmm.
But like. Seeing people that desperately seek knowledge instead of power is more relatable, because I mean that's the kind of in our real world, knowledge is much more power than any of these abstract notions that we see in Digimon.
I'm not sure they're really searching for knowledge so much as attention.
I would say more like ability.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
So I guess I was searching that with like intelligence, because they are more able at school.
They also get better at sports. We didn't see any of that, but, like, that's what the Spore did for Ken. And, who was it? Arukenimon mentioned it last arc. She was like, don't you want to be good at school and sports?
Mm.
So it is general ability.
But it's also weird how much... I'm trying to decide if I want to avoid using the word privilege, because it's such a coded word that people who understand the language understand, and people who don't understand less.
Mm-hmm.
But, so maybe someone can step in to explain this better, but it's like, the Digidestined don't understand what it's like to be in the position of these kids that don't have their specialness. And yeah. So they keep saying things like, it, you know, I mean, they don't keep saying, but the message they get in the end is like, it doesn't matter if you're not Digidestined, like, you can still be special, like, you can still be special in your own way. And they're kind of missing, they don't know what it's like to be like that. You know, they only know what it's like to be themselves, and they have certain privileges and benefits that they aren't fully aware of what it's like to live without them.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I found kind of weird to... because the show is kind of complicit in the message of, you don't need to be Digidestined, you know?
Certainly, by the end.
Well, in a weird way, it's also like, you don't need to be Digidestined. Also, everyone's a Digidestined, so... I guess those go hand in hand. If you reduce the specialness of it, then everyone gets a ticket.
I mean, it just feels like it's like clearly they're special and they prize Digimon, but then the rest of the world, whenever Digimon come up, it's like everything's going to be destroyed. Humans don't understand. I don't know. There's some like pushback towards what makes them special that perhaps makes them unable to like appreciate specialness and how others can't understand because they're just wrong.
I've lost you. Who can't understand? You mean like the Digidestined?
Our main character kids don't understand because they're used to everyone else being like, Digimon bad!
Yeah.
Hmm.
Whereas they think it's special, but, like, nobody else understands them. So there's... Because, I mean, that's what makes, like, Oikawa and Cody's dad weird, is that they play video games and think the world is real.
There was an interesting note from the Digimon System Restore review episode 46 about how Oikawa's plan kind of depends on the parents' selfishness and their selfish desire for wanting to, like, keep the extra talent the kids have gotten a secret and not tell authorities that something weird's going on, which I thought was really interesting because I hadn't really considered that, like, it has to be part of his plan that they will be so selfish.
But what would they report? Like, how could they...
Well, all those kids were kidnapped.
But the police already know that.
Right, but now...
My kid is acting weird after being kidnapped. Like, they just returned to us and he's acting like a completely different person. That is cause for concern.
I just feel like you wouldn't go to police for that. You'd go to, like, a doctor.
Yeah.
A psychologist. Sure.
And, but, like, yeah. I feel like if all the kids who were kidnapped also end up going to psychologists and acting a particular way, the police would get involved to figure out what they did to cause it.
Sure. But, I mean, is the same thing happened with Ken's parents?
I did feel like there was the parents that we saw in this arc, I just only saw one pair of parents, and they were, like, so cartoonishly selfish.
Yeah. It was
frustrating. Like, I never imagined Ken's parents were that cartoonish about it.
Well, there's an extra layer for Ken's parents because it's like, we lost the son.
Well, also,
now we're grieving. Yeah. And then, like, Ken shows his grief possibly by trying to imitate Sam. And then they're all, like, unable to see it.
Yeah, and Ken, it was also over a longer period of time where Ken was actively pretending to still be, like, a nice person.
Yes.
So this is an aspect where, like, even though this scenario is, like, super fantastical, magical element, or it's a magical item that gives the kids success while making them lose their humanity, but it's, like, totally relatable, I thought, you know, like, of what people can relate to is parents pushing their kids to want to see it and, you know, losing other aspects of themselves in the process.
I mean, then don't they talk about, I mean, they have their whole conversation about parents and, like, the Dizzy Destin, they're like, we should go, or, like, Izzy's mom
has got
to go, she's going to, yes, says she's going to go contact all the parents, and then most of the Dizzy Destin are like, I don't think their parents can do anything, but then Ken was like, no, their parents do have some power.
Ken was like, it's super important. Yeah.
Which never happened.
Yeah.
In the wise words of Tentomon, what's a parent's?
Exactly.
In the other wise words of Tentomon, I want my Digimommy, so.
In the other wise words of Tentomon, Izzy's mom is pretty cool and beautiful or something.
Yeah, he said something really weird about her. I don't remember what it was.
He got hooked on Digimommies once he met his mom.
Yes.
No comment.
That's probably the best perch.
Yeah.
Black or Gray Mom's butt.
Has it got it going on?
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, we briefly touched on it before, but I don't think I asked for your guys' opinion. Like, do you think that it's hypocritical to teach a lesson that you don't need Digivice to be a Digidestiny special, and then once they accept that, to then give them Digivices and Digimon?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially because the entire world got Digimon after that. I'm okay with that.
Wait, you're saying it is hypocritical?
Oh, no.
My question was it hypocritical?
I thought you said, I heard super critical, and I was like...
Oh.
Is it important that they got the Digivices? Yes. I like that. But that's because it's two different things that I'm thinking of. So there's the kids that want to be special, but they want to be special by conforming to a certain standard. Right? A very high standard. But then they decide to be themselves, and then they get Digimon, which I've said before are extensions of themselves. And, you know, power up by being true to yourself. And yay, I'm good with that. So I don't think it's hypocritical to give them the Digimon at that point. Because at that point, it's not about being special anymore. It's about being like the other kids.
This is all very confusing now.
Yeah.
It's just very muddled because it's like their whole goal initially is that they want to be like other kids.
No, they don't want to be like other kids. They want to be like Ken. Yeah.
True, true. And then like it kind of morphs into like as they're there, they're like, we want to have Digimon. We want to be like Digidestin. It kind of changes at some point.
But it's still more like they want to be like a certain, they want a certain specialness still. They're still couching it in terms of things.
I mean, so I kind of buy the argument that, like, it's only once they stop feeling like they need to have Digimon to be special that they're able, like, that they deserve, like, that they shouldn't get one just because, like, they think they need one. You know, like, only once they accept the right message can they get one.
Same goes for Oikawa. He wanted Digimon, and so he made Arukenimon and Mummimon.
From his DNA and data.
Yeah, and that turned out really poorly for him because he wanted them for the wrong reasons. But then once he's like, well, I don't remember exactly what he said. But then he got Deuterimon, and that was good.
And Deuterimon isn't an ultimate, though. He made two ultimates.
Yeah, and he hated them.
Yeah, the way that he talks to, like, Arukenimon is so troubling.
Yeah. And he does it to Mummimon, too. But he talks to Arukenimon more, because Arukenimon is smarter.
But, Mummimon is sillier, so he's, like, less aware of it himself. But, like, Arukenimon understands.
Yeah.
And is just unable to, like, get out of it, and so just becomes increasingly angry.
It was bad times for everybody. I just want to say, I like that all the Digimon that popped up at the end were baby level, because those kids and Oikawa were not taking care of themselves spiritually. Like, no other kid has started with a baby level except for Wallace, and he was in a movie, so he doesn't count.
Wow.
He doesn't. All the other kids started with kid level Digimon.
Hmm.
Or, no, they had in training. It was in training.
What is kid? I mean, the kid's not a...
Rookie.
Well, child.
Yeah.
It's child in Japanese, I think.
But then these kids aren't emotionally stable enough to raise a baby.
Well, if the Digimon is part of them rather than a baby they are taking care of, it's not...
Yeah, it's weird.
Quite so bad. Plus, they still have their parents.
What's a parent?
It's your Digimommy, Jeff. That's a parent's. And also, that was Gomamon's line, not Tetamon's.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You're totally right.
Now Jeff is so sad.
I'm sad. Why did I know that?
One of the most controversial parts of these last couple episodes is the illusions. The scenarios, the paradise scenarios the characters end up in, and how that reflects on the characters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go through each one of them.
Okay, well, Davis didn't have one. Or if he did, we didn't see it.
No, he didn't.
Well, no, Myotismon says it didn't work on him.
Oh, that's right. Because Davis doesn't have any desires whatsoever. Or insecurities.
Yeah, he doesn't have insecurities.
Or fears.
Yeah, I would say insecure. I would not say he doesn't have desires. He definitely has desires.
Or does he?
I thought it was pretty interesting how, like, them winning the conflict, like, them breaking out of Myotismon's illusion or whatever, comes down to Myotismon expecting everyone to have some kind of, like, big inner demon conflict going on, and, like, finding out that, like, someone is, like, not messed up inside is, like... such a foreign concept to him. He's like, what?
Whoa. Okay, they're not messed up, they're human. Davis is a little weird.
I didn't think the episode portrayed him as like being super like alien or anything, you know.
It's no, but like no. I wouldn't call the other kids messed up.
Oh yeah, okay, messed up maybe was more extreme than I intended, but they all have things they're working through, and I think it's definitely more the norm, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and I mean, just thinking about how this group of friends, and like we've talked a lot before about how whereas the Adventure cast really grew individually, that the Adventure Zero 2 cast really grows as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now thinking, like, is Davis so content because he has this team with him?
That might be it. Because he worries about not being a good friend back in that stupid episode. But that's not an issue for him anymore.
Actual appropriate use of that sound.
Yes, the only appropriate use of that sound clip.
Anyway, when Myotismon is like, it didn't work on you, Davis is like, what do I have to not like? I have my family and my friends. And I think he said friends first. Like, I'm a friend and a family and, like, whatever. I'm totally happy, dude. I just want to own a ramen.
But he doesn't say that yet.
It's true, he doesn't say that till later.
Yeah.
I should find what he says.
Anyway,
I
think I wrote it down. This is the moment in which I most appreciate Davis.
Yeah, I mean, he's able to say much more level-headed about it.
Oh, he says, I have my friends, my family, and my Digimon, of course.
When Davis does that speech to Myosmon, like, how it didn't work on him, he totally reminds me of, like, all the main, like, magical pretty girls and, like, series, like, Precures. So Davis is clearly a magical pretty girl.
He missed his true calling in life.
He did.
To open a ramen shop. So, you know, maybe that's okay.
So I don't know the show you're referring to.
Actually, it's other Toei shows. Like the Precure series. Like something similar happens in like some of the last episodes where like, cause usually it's like, it has, like, the enemies usually rely on emotions and then they take advantage of the emotions, stuff like that. So Davis missed his true calling.
Well, once you mentioned that and not knowing the series you referred to, it made me think of a trend in, I actually know if it's just a magical girl trend, but like in Madoka Magica, where it's all about people getting to grant wishes and she's like, I don't have any wishes. I can't, like, it's all about her, like, the series is her deciding what I wish is going to be, basically.
Yeah, but it's like that, but, like, in certain Precure series, they take advantage of, like, people's, like, the villain tries to, like, turn the main girl dark or something, etc. And then it doesn't work because she doesn't have that darkness in her.
Yeah, but it's just weird, like, in the different ways it can take effect that, like, there is a trope of having the main character be less perfect. Emotional. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say Davis is perfect, but...
Well, he's not. But he's perfect in the fact that nothing... Because he's so dumb.
Well, he's perfect in the Japanese, but he's ultimate in the English.
Wow.
I'm leaving.
So let's move on to TK. TK!
TK!
He wishes his parents got back together.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of comments to the effect of, this is BS, this came out of nowhere, like, TK shows no...
What do you mean it came out of nowhere?
That's not true!
It came out of everywhere!
Okay. I'm just going to finish the general sentiments I see on the internet about this. It's not my own.
All right.
Well, you're all wrong, internet!
But TK expresses no concerns about this divorce in the second season. He seems to hang out with Matt a relatively decent amount.
But it's so awkward.
Yeah.
I don't think it's actually that awkward.
No.
It was pretty awkward.
That he never really explicitly like brings it up in the text of the show that he's like, I'm so sad I don't get to.
Because TK doesn't do that.
Well, what's weird is that he does have this other giant angst hole of stuff, PTSD-ish, dealing with Patamon's death.
Right.
But that's not really something that could be solved, because Patamon is revived and with him, so...
Yeah.
He kind of got that already.
I thought TK has made perfect sense, and that it is alluded to enough, both in Season 2 and Season 1,
yeah,
that it made perfect sense.
I feel like the only allusion to it is that his parents are divorced. I feel like... It's kind of
No.
That scene where he's with Matt in Matt and his dad's apartment is so awkward and, like, obviously TK is sad.
I never thought the scene was that awkward.
You're viewing it wrong.
It was pretty awkward. Like, I'm with Ashley on this one.
I mean, it was awkward because, like, the animation made it look like Matt's dad had peed his pants, but...
Oh my god.
No.
What?
Were you not there for this episode?
Ugh. It was one of the episodes that had the extra animation, so, like, it had extra shadows that aren't normally there in his pants, so, like, his crotch was totally...
Only you noticed this, Jeff.
Yes.
Only I can prevent forest fires.
Notice that, but not the painful awkwardness of TK coming to his brother and his dad's apartment.
His, I think you mean the bro cave.
Like, first of all, we never see Matt at TK's place either.
Yeah.
Yeah, did we ever really see Matt interacting with... Keep thinking of him as TK's mom, but both their moms. Both their mom.
Ooh, we haven't seen it since Season 1.
So that is weird.
Yeah.
Wait, we saw it in Season 1?
At the end of the Myotismon arc, the whole family is together. And
sort of.
No, they're all standing in the same place, okay? And Matt sees his mom, and he's like, hi. He just, like, doesn't... He can't. And TK's reaction at that point is like, yay, everybody's back together again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, he's been pushing for this for 8 years, or however long they've been divorced.
I think that common sentiment is that he would have outgrown this. And
I don't think you just, like, outgrow that, really.
Well, okay. So, I don't know.
You can outgrow expressing it, which he certainly has.
Yeah. I still feel confident in my opinions because I don't know what living through the situation is like. And I think at least some of the people that are like, ugh, not everyone who has divorced parents thinks it's their, like, number one issue and needs to be solved. That those people...
Okay, that's probably true, but, like...
Yeah, sure.
I don't feel like Matt has that issue, but Matt was older when they got divorced.
Yeah. And like,
feels responsible for TK.
We already know that TK, like, doesn't express negative feelings unless they're anger.
Yeah, like, he's not sad.
Like, this is the first time we've seen him scared.
Yeah. I mean, it is. There also are a lot of complaints that, like, you know, he held out hope when fighting, when, like, all the other Digidestin got turned into keychains against Paimon, and he was being, like, chased by a terrifying clown, and, you know, in the face of Malamaresmon, was just like, oh, God, I'm so scared. And...
Malamaresmon tortured a Digimon to death.
Yeah, yeah, I agree that that's the difference that, like, there's a difference between, like, they saw lots of Digimon die in the Dark Master's arc, but, like, Malamaresmon just, like, without any effort, killed Arukaimon and Maimon, which I think lended a totally different dynamic to the battle, where it's not, like, you can't just send Patamon and, like, see if he loses and then, like, make sure he's safe. Like, you could send Patamon and then he could just be killed in one attack, which is much more terrifying.
It wasn't just killing, like, it was willful, like, on purpose pain. And fear. And that, we have not seen that before.
Have we not? I think we've seen plenty of people trying to instill fear and pain.
For a reason. We've seen Ken as the Digimon Emperor, you know, whipping Digimon to get them to do something. What Malamaresmon did to Arukenimon, I don't think we've seen before.
Well, we did see Venomaresmon eat Demidevimon.
For a reason.
So that was different. Yeah, that was the power up or whatever.
I'm content to say that TKs make sense and you're all wrong, Internet.
I agree.
Just because, like, you as a divorced kid don't, like, got over it, like, your reality does not disown, like, TK's reality.
I think people are reading it wrong if they think that what it's saying is that every divorced kid has emotional baggage and is, like, the biggest thing they're dealing with. I don't think it's even saying this is, like, the biggest thing TK is worried about every day, you know, like...
Yeah.
I think it's just saying that it's, like, an underlying thing that, like, is a part of his life that he is kind of, like, things would be better if this could be fixed.
Yeah.
Not, like, saying that every day makes him depressed or something, you know?
Yeah, because he loves every member of his family, and it would just... You know, it would make things easier on him if they were all at the same place getting along, which is never going to happen.
Who's next?
Yoli.
Next is Yoli. Yoli and her never-ending cakes, which I would assume is the one that gets the most flack.
Yes, yeah. The most ire. And yeah. I definitely, most of my ire is with Yoli. But I also don't think the internet is...
Being fair to her.
I think there is an underlying core to her desire. So, we didn't even set it up, but, like, she basically wishes she were an only child and could keep eating candy or cake or something forever.
But she just wishes she didn't have to share.
Yeah.
Yes, but, like, so the actual thing that they laid out her doing seems extremely petty and silly, but, like, there's an underlying core idea there, which is, like, not having to share, not having to be overshadowed by her older siblings and, like, you know.
And her younger ones. Or is she the youngest? I thought she had at least one younger.
I have no idea. I lost track.
She has a lot of siblings, basically. And her whole family is centered around the store. They've all always been pitching in. She has never been spoiled.
Right. I've never... You don't think I've really seen her interact with her parents?
We do.
We have. It's most of Yoli's interactions with her family.
It's usually involving her is taking food from the store.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of Yoli's interactions with her family are, like, shouting across the house. And it's like, Yoli, can you go do this? Or, Dad, it's your turn.
Yeah.
Or, sis, it's time for dinner sort of deal. You don't get the sense that, like, they don't love each other, but it's sort of like there's always something going on. There's never a moment for Yoli or for any of them in that house, you know?
What it kind of reminds me of is Ron in the Harry Potter books. And I can't remember when I had this, like, feeling or revelation or whatever. I think it was, like, later on, like, when I was more For context, like the Harry Potter books came out while we were growing up. The last book came out when we were seniors in high school, aside from Andrew.
Which book?
The last one. Came out when we went to Chautauqua, so I think that's correct.
That was like 2007.
Yeah.
So, but it was like the summer, so it was like right before we were seniors in high school.
Yeah.
I would have been in high school.
Right. So at any point, anyway, I remember having this revelation where, like, there must have been some scene between Ron and his dad or something. And I was just like, oh, right. They're father and son. I forgot about that. Because, like, you never really, like, there's never a time for them to really interact as, like, father and son. Because it's just, like, he's the head of the household and he is part of the household. Like, you don't really get a personal relationship between them very often. I think that's the same kind of dynamic where it's like, not so much she's like not spoiled and she wishes she were spoiled, but it's like she's just part of a family instead of having closer interaction or closer relationships.
Yeah. The thing with Yoli's one is she shook it off mostly by herself. Like, Hawkmon just asked her a question, is this what you really want? And she was like, no. Yeah. And she got sad about it and she's like... So, like, I'm okay with Yoli, because, like...
I think Yoli's was, like, the weakest, but it made sense still.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think people might also take umbrage with the fact that she shook it off so quickly, but I think what that shows is that she is, like... Like, the fact that she had this, like, her ultimate desire or whatever, like, he's just written off in a couple seconds. I think what that shows is she's, like, reflects how hot-headed she is, and it's just, like, like, we'll come up with an idea and not really think it through. Like, she's not smart. She's very smart, but, like... Yeah.
She's hasty.
Hasty and energetic, and, like, will eventually think it through completely. But, like, initially is kind of, we'll climb the control spire or go down in a pit or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. I also think that this is not necessarily, like, we mentioned this with TK's, it's not necessarily their deepest desire. It's whatever is going to get them off Myotismon's back for, like, a few minutes while he does his thing.
He didn't do anything either.
He didn't do it. I guess it took less time than he thought it would.
What was he going to do either? Like, he could just use one attack?
I guess he was distracted because it didn't work on Davis, so he couldn't do anything. Because Davis was also the only one fighting him in the first place. I don't know. I don't know what happened there. Because, you know, dreams take much less time in real life than they do.
True. A bit like the digital world in the first season.
Right. Is that enough on Yoli?
Yes.
I think we're doing a good job defending the controversial choices.
Yeah.
The controversial things the internet hates.
Yeah. Next was Cody, right?
People don't hate Cody, so whatever. Cody.
Cody's
was the best.
Yeah, like, there's no... Cody.
I like Ken's better, but...
Ken's, there's a lot to say about Ken's. There's so much to say about Ken's.
Ken's had a lot of more levels.
Yeah.
Ashley, we don't need to hear you rave about that song anymore.
I mean, it's a good song.
It's a good song. Do we want to say anything about Cody's? We all agree that it hurts.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit before about the, like, at least I brought up the creepy face and put out the really good point that it's the face that he saw in the portraits, which is cool.
Yes. Who's next?
Kari.
So she wishes... Wait, we didn't mention what Cody's actually was. So people who haven't watched recently...
It was his dad. He was showing his dad that it is the world, and he hoped that his dad would be proud of him, which was what got me, hoping that his dad would be proud of him. This dad, this mystical figure who sacrificed himself for the greater good, hoping that his dad would be proud of him. I was just like, oh my god.
Which is something he's mentioned before. Like, I think he said the same line during when they were fighting Marine Devimon.
Yeah, and I think it may have come up even before that. Maybe not in regards to his dad exactly, but when he was, you know, freaking out about the crest of reliability.
About lying?
About lying. Like, he wants to be
the kind
of...
My dad won't like me in the afterlife if I lie, oh no.
He wants to be the kind of perfect person that he thinks his dad was, because he never met his dad. He has no basis of reality, so. Poor Cody.
Oh, yes. So on to Kari. Kari's wish is for, I guess, peace and for kids to have Digimon peacefully?
Yeah, it's peace and it's also, like, taking care of each other. Like, she wants everybody to be perfect, basically.
I actually thought Kari's was the weakest for me.
I don't know. It fits in with other things Kari... The few things Kari's ever expressed in two seasons. Because she doesn't want to fight, and...
Kari is a goody zero-two-shoes.
Wow.
I mean, it fits in with that. It's just, I don't know, I guess I expected it to be something about, like, Ty more.
I actually liked that Ty wasn't in the picture at all.
It actually is weird how maybe it kind of cools the flip. What am I trying to say? It takes away from our arguments that a lot of the kids have this theme of looking up to their older sibling and having it baggage because of that. Mm-hmm. When that doesn't come up in, well, I guess Matt does come up in TK's.
Yeah, and I also think the fact that Ty isn't there in Kari's is significant because she, in the original Japanese of episode 13, which is the Dark Ocean one, you know, when that part where TK shouts and is like, I'm worried about you, that's not what he said in Japanese. He told her she needs to get out of Ty's shadow, more or less. And in that dream, she has. Because Ty doesn't really mind the fighting. Ty is a warrior, and she's never been comfortable with that. Every time they've had a little war discussion in season 2, she and Ty, like, she's always looked so frickin' sad.
I don't say it doesn't make sense. It's just I had a different expectation.
Yeah. It's kind of boring.
Well,
yeah.
It's. I feel like that's fitting with Kari. Like, Kari is kind of the boring one. Like, the thing.
In a lot of ways,
she's like the vanilla, like, this is like goodness. She is goody zero two shoes.
Yeah.
And it's also fitting how it is kind of, it's unclear what the exact extent of what's going on in this illusion world, but I mean, it's very similar to what actually happens with everyone getting Digimon and stuff.
It is. Kari got her wish.
Well, it's also like, she is so aligned with like light and good. And I'm like, okay, well, her wish is like what happens to the world, because her wish was kind of the world's wish, because she doesn't have her things.
Yeah. That makes me really sad. Wow.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I hadn't thought about how that was said.
Kari, want more things in your life.
Want TK. Why, you know, want TK.
Want Yoli. Yoli's good at wanting things.
Well, okay. But also, there were comments, especially on this, that episodic review comments complaining that, like, people saying it was the most artificial one and they're superficial. And actually, I think that was actually the main review itself. But anyway, I totally disagree, because, I mean, Kari's had so much pressure on her the whole time, and, mm-hmm. like, what she wishes for is a world where there are Digidestined who don't have that pressure, who can get the benefits she's had. Like, she's had all these good benefits, like having close friends and going on adventures and stuff, and she wants to have people without having the dark sides.
So. Yeah, I see that.
Although, as TK says, whenever there's light, there's dark, so it's kind of a bogus, unrealistic wish.
Well, all of them are unrealistic wishes.
We're gonna get into that.
You mean Yoli can't eat candy forever?
Alright.
Let's go, Ken.
Ken. Ken! Ken.
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 Can you do the Ken?
I don't know, can he?
Ken, Ken. Ken, 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 Ken.
Face palm.
Okay, so, Ken.
Ken.
So Ken's is, first, he's in a desert, and he sees the Digimon Emperor tied to some kind of post, and all the Digimon he's hurt during his reign as the Digimon Emperor stone him to death, basically.
It's also the desert where everything important happens to Ken, so.
Yeah, like the Dark Spore, yeah. And it's where his base goes down.
And then Sam comes back.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And forgives his Digimon Emperor-ness?
Sort of. He's like, you come with me and I'll take care of you again. And Ken is like, yes, please. I missed you so much, Sam. Come back. And it's just, Cody's is the most painful for a lot of reasons. Or Cody's is the most heartbreaking, I think. And Ken's
it's
is
very
the most
straightforward.
Painful. Cody's or Ken's?
Cody's. It's very much just like,
yeah.
Your dad who's gone is here. It's all happy. You're like, Ken's illusion is much more much more going on.
Yeah, and like, so Ken's wish here is to absolve himself of guilt by destroying himself. But at the same time, he sort of avoids the destruction because it's the Digimon Emperor up there and he's watching. So he's dissociated himself from that. And then Sam comes back and absolves Ken of the responsibility of cleaning up after himself, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a reading of it that assumes that it's a suicidal thing, that he, like, wants to be, like, punished for his crimes. And I think it's more that he wants to, like, erase that it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, be gone with the Digimon Emperor.
Exactly. I think the self-punishment thing is there, but also, I think more, he wants more.
Yeah, he definitely does want judgment for...
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to have ever gotten closure with those Digimon that are, like, so mad at him. Like, he had, like, brief one-sided conversations with the baby Digimon that he had killed that came back or whatever, but, they never really interact with random Digimon with Ken.
Yeah. And I don't think he ever will get that closure, because he did terrible things, and the only thing he can do, realistically, is be responsible and keep working hard forever. Because the fact that he did that is never going to go away, even though there were extenuating circumstances, even though he's trying really hard now, like, he's always going to feel bad about it.
I think you mean the only thing he can do.
I'm going to leave, and you're...
Kendo.
I'm leaving. I'm going to go to the bathroom and never come back.
So, Ken's illusion makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Check mark for you, Ken.
Well, I don't think we should be... It's kind of weird to be evaluating, like, does this make sense or not make sense? Like, there's so much more to this, and to media in general, than just, like, logical? Yes, no. Good, bad. Based on logical or not.
What do people hate Ken's? Tell me why.
No, I think people like Ken's. And we like Ken's. Okay. Obviously.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of them make sense. It's just... Some of them resonate more strongly, more quickly than others. Like, it took me longer to get behind Yoli's.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally, like, cool Yoli.
Yeah. But, like, as a kid, Yoli's seemed really stupid to me.
Aw, because you love your brother so much.
What? I, like, barely recognized that Yoli had siblings as a kid. I just thought the kicks were stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not loved.
Yeah.
No love for whatever.
Yeah, no love for Andrew.
I definitely had the same reaction to Mimi as a kid. Like, both of them, I was like, oh, they're just spoiled brats. Like,
Mimi suffers from jokes, though.
They just do.
Yeah.
Or maybe not jokes.
Mimi suffers from actually being a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
I'm still unclear how much she's actually spoiled. And also, that whole Princess Karaoke episode, like, she finally gets what she wants for once, and it's like, spoiled brat, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I think she gets an extreme version of what she wants.
Yes.
True.
Yes.
There are TV tropes names for this thing, this whole illusion concept. Actually, two different things that it, there's the final temptation, named after the last temptation of Christ, which is what this episode is named after, so it's kind of fitting. And
crazy.
And there's also, so that's just, like, kind of the final hurdle being a, like, you get everything you've wanted, now you have to, like, reject it kind of concept. And a very similar related concept is the Lotus Eater, the Lotus Eater machine, which I think is more very similar but abstracted away. It's not tied down to the finale. It's just the when there's, like, a world, an illusion, fake world set up to trap someone, and they need to reject it to go back to the real world or whatever. That's a very common trope, apparently. Yeah.
Shocking.
My favorite instance of this trope is in Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, where the whole game is about trying to basically break free of the fake game world that you're in.
So I assume that these illusions are based on wishes, and I believe, okay, we can maybe fight about it, because maybe you all disagree, but I believe that the difference between dreams and wishes, as laid out by this arc, and many other pieces of media, is that wishes are basically something that's actually unattainable. It is something that would never come true unless you did alter the parameters of the world or something.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas dreams are something that you can make happen. They are attainable goals.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, no, I agree.
Jeffrey, do you agree?
Before you started going into different... I was half falling asleep and half thinking through my definitions of those words. And I heard everything you said. I didn't actually fall asleep. But I was actually thinking that a wish is more of a, like, singular, not small, but, like, a singular thing, like a single variable tweaked or something. Whereas, like, a dream is, like, a whole vision of lots of things changing. Maybe that's not really...
Well, I mean, as they are used in this arc... Like, the kids' dreams are what they want to be when they grow up.
Yeah, whereas I would say that the illusions are composed of their wishes, which are completely unattainable goals.
Well, Kari's goal happens, so...
Well, but they, okay. That's because Mayor's Mon actually altered the world how the world works. So, it was unattainable previous. Yeah. They also make wishes on their D3s in order to make their Digimon split. I'm trying to...
In the weird world.
Yeah. And those ones are also actually kind of unattainable. Davis's desire is, I want Vimon to be stronger! And then TK's is, I don't want the forces of darkness to hurt my friends, which is gonna happen. Yoli's is just, we are strong three times, so I guess it's kind of like Davis's, I just want Vimon to be stronger. Cody's wish is like, I don't actually remember what Cody's is, but I think it was like, I want to protect the digital world, which is, keeping the digital world safe forever is also not really plausible. Yeah. Kari is like, I want to protect the future of both worlds. Like, yeah, go for it, Kari. And then Ken doesn't actually make a wish.
What does Ken do?
He just digivolves Wormon.
He doesn't need
Wormon
to.
Only has one.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, Stingmon's still really awesome, so it's okay, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Still sad. I mean, I'm just like, the colloquial uses of wish...
Yeah, it's different from how I would normally use these words.
Oh, okay. So,
really?
So...
Because, I mean, it's like, be careful what you wish for, because you might get it. We use it in terms of, like, genies can grant you three wishes. I don't know.
Well, you can also wish someone well. Like, wish, for me, doesn't have the same grand, what's the word I'm looking for? Like,
I don't know.
A dream is impermanent and vague and something that may or may not happen and sort of, you know, not...
I just feel like there's also more of a negative connotation with wishes. Like, especially with the be careful what you wish for thing. And, like, I came up with this topic thinking of Escaflowne, which is very much about spoilers for Escaflowne.
Serious spoilers.
It's like, in the end, they want to build this machine that was destroyed in the past that granted people's wishes. But in the end, it's like everybody just wishes to fight each other and, like, do these horrible things. And they're like, wait, this is awful. Like...
Well, part of that is that I'm kind of trying to remember, like, it's been, like, 7 years since we watched that together, but, at least, like, you've watched since, but I haven't. But, it's, like, the wish-granting machine can't, it doesn't grant things that are, like, impossible to claim. It can't, I feel like, they fight because they, like, wish for power and stuff, right? So they end up fighting to get power, right? Like...
I think it's like, yeah, it's like, but I think it's like commoners would wish to be rulers, and that's also sort of an impossible dream.
Right.
And I just feel like, you know, even in things like Aladdin, when there's genies, it's like, in the end, you kind of have to wish for, like, stuff to go back to normal-ish.
Yeah, I guess what I'm thinking now is funny is that, like, when everyone, like, gets their ultimate wish, like, there's still gonna be conflict. Things are still gonna clash with each other. Not everything can coexist with each other, even in a magic world where, like, everyone gets what they want, because wants conflict with each other.
I suppose. I mean, I do think it is somewhat problematic that wishes do have a more dark connotation, but...
Mm-hmm. I don't mind that so much, because I think that it has that from teaching people a lesson. It comes from, like, teaching people a lesson that they should... I agree with the lesson of being careful what you wish for, that things can have consequences that aren't immediately apparent.
That you don't expect.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it teaches a lot of things. It teaches that, like, the grass is always green on the other side is a fallacy, I guess, and that, you know, other people have it harder than it appears, and all those sorts of things come bundled up in that.
I suppose.
So, inherited wills. So, I've talked a lot this season, I personally, but we as a group have all talked a lot about, you know, how the kids this season learn from one another and from the people who have come before. But this arc in particular shows a lot more of the parents, not just of our kids, but of the Dark Spore kids. We've got Oikawa coming in, who's not a parent, but is of the generation of their parents. We've got, we finally got more of the story of the missing link between Cody and his grandfather and certain things that have happened. And I think the big lesson of season two, if season one is about growing into the best self yourself can be, season two is about how the people around us and who touch us push us in certain directions, make us stronger in certain directions. So, like, you've got on the evil side, I guess, if evil is the right word. I'm not comfortable using this word in season two. On the dark side, you've got the Digimon Emperor, you've got Ken, you've got the Dark Spore Kids, you've got Oikala, Myotismon, Black or Greymon, the Dark... what are those called? Control Spires. You've got...
They also call it Dark Tower, though, so...
Are they? Are they also called Dark Towers?
Well, this is Ken, crazy. Ken asked. He was like, what's up with the Dark Towers?
This is madness. Don't do this to me. you've got the Dark Ocean? How could I forget the Dark Ocean? You've got all these different forces that play on each other. And it's not just one bad Digimon going off the rails and deciding, I'm going to take over the digital world. It's everything bouncing off each other. The kids wanted to be like Ken, so they got the Dark Spires and that... Dark Spires? They got the Dark Spores. And that, in turn, powered Mallow Myotismon, who was spreading his dark influence everywhere, but was also taking in dark power, I guess, from everyone else. And, like, it's not isolated like it was in the first season. And that's, I think, the big deal of season two, is that when a story about humans is rooted in the human world, you get so much more of that interconnected feedback loop. So, like, it's not just Oikala and Myotismon behind it all. It's years and years and years of things escalating to this point. Like, Oikala wouldn't have been open to Myotismon if Cody's grandpa hadn't shut him down, shut him and Hiroki down. He wouldn't have been alone if Hiroki hadn't been his only friend, hadn't been the only one to share something with him, and then died. Ken wouldn't have been in his position if Sam hadn't been in his position. If Sam hadn't been that pressured golden child. And those kids wouldn't have been there either. And then on the good side, you have the parents... For most of the season, you have the kids ignoring their parents and telling them nothing. But once they finally bring the parents in, like, you see, like, Izzy's mom is like, everyone is helping in their own way. Which is not true, but... some of the parents are helping in their own way. Like, what has Ty's mom and dad ever done?
Ken's dad is still going through files.
Ken's dad is still going through files that don't do anything. And like, in episode 49, each of the kids is isolated within that illusion, but it's Davis's one spark of bullheadedness that gets all of them out. It gets the others, the Dark Spore Kids, out of their funk. Like, they all... It only takes one to get something started. And that's not something we get from season one. Because in season one, it's about you, singular. And then in season two, it's about you, plural. Which you can't do in English.
Oh, sorry.
Y'all.
Oh, English.
Oh, English.
Y'all.
Yeah, y'all.
I'm not that southern, guys.
I've actually started saying y'all because I like its gender neutralness.
I say it too.
And also, my coworkers are, like, one of those from Kentucky.
Kentucky's pretty north. And that's why I like the epilogue, in a way, because it shows that, like, everything the parents have done, and the parents are our kids now, so they've grown up, and what they give their kids now is the chance to...
succeed.
Not exactly. It's not just to carry on their prophecy that they had. It's to go and do their own thing. So it's kind of... The kids look like clones of their parents.
Oh, yeah.
And their Digimon are clones, too.
Yeah, well, that's... I accept that. But, like, their adventures are going to be very, very different. And they're already all together. They've been together all their lives. So I actually wish that Tri wasn't our set of adventure kids in high school. I wish it was the new kids.
They could still be there?
Maybe exploring the ramifications of what happened to this world.
Yeah, they could be there.
Oh, you mean like the baby kids?
Sora could be knocked up in high school.
Oh my god. Actually, no, if you notice, like, TK and Kari's kids are older than Matt and Sora's kids.
Oh, really?
Really?
Mm-hmm. They're bigger. Matt and Sora's kids are not that big.
In the scale of them having kids, their age gaps aren't that big, right?
It's 4 years. 3 or 4 years. Although the oldest are Ken and Yuli's kids.
Because they have a jillion.
Yeah, they have three? Four?
One's a baby.
I thought the baby's whole.
At least three.
They have a lot.
Okay, so there's a lot to talk about this epilogue.
I thought it was okay, it's just the writing of the dialogue was just so annoying. Like, the dialogue, TK is, like, talking, and it's just like, oh my god, TK, shut up.
Wow! I mean, the dub, there are a couple dubisms that are just like...
Such as?
I think, I forget if we mentioned it or not already, but the Matt showing a picture of Matt on Mars and then saying he was supposed to go to the moon, but he went to Mars instead. Like, that's just...
Yes, that's how space flights work.
I can't imagine a single person finding that funny.
You have to, like, prepare and have enough food to go to Mars. Actually, Are you serious?
It's not worth expressing. No, don't. You're letting them win.
I'm still mad about Sora being a fashion designer. I know I've said a lot about femininity and how it works with Sora, but, like, where did that even come from?
So let's walk through each one of them individually. So let's start with Sora.
Why?
Okay. Why, I think, is a question that comes up in a lot of these discussions. A lot of people will be mad at the blog. And I actually take a lot of issue with that question. Like, so it's kind of unrelated to, like, what we were discussing about Tora, but a lot of the attitude I see in discussions of the epilogue are like, these things came out of nowhere, like, they're not justified at all. And it's like, yeah, because the person that you are when you're 11 or 12,
that's,
or
I guess,
14, 15, is not going to be who you are when you're adult. And it's just like, it's really...
I mean, I agree with this.
It's really weird to expect that.
At the same time, though, when you're setting up a story, you kind of want some narrative closure, something that ties in to where they came from before. Like,
or you just don't tell the future like that. Like, like, it's very explicitly about what they became, rather than, like, their children or something.
Yeah.
It's true. And, yeah, there are a lot of ways around that. Like, they definitely, it's like, they have a limited amount of time for each character, and it's like, that's what they say about them. They say, like, this is what they became. Maybe, like, a line of dialogue with their children or something, but that...
It makes sense, given, like, the conversation that Davis had just had with the Spore kids. Because, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Why is your dream what you want to be when you grow up, though? Like, why?
That's true, but then Davis is the only one who does what he said.
Well, it's the only one who said something then.
Yeah.
Also, Kari said she wanted to be a teacher.
Oh, no, Kari did say she wanted to be a teacher, and she became a teacher.
Mm, true.
TK's used to come out of left field for me, but then I remembered that both his parents are journalists. Yeah. And his mother, in particular, is a print journalist.
I mean, I think there's also problematic aspects of choosing a dream, choosing a career as a child, and then, like, sticking to that for your whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe becomes a doctor in the digital world.
Yeah, and Izzy sticks with computers.
The thing is, those are so underlying. I'm less concerned with that because it's like, that's so ingrained in who those people are.
So Joe wouldn't be Joe if he wasn't a doctor? His whole part of his struggle was that he didn't know if he wanted to do it. He was pressured into it.
Okay, that's not fair. The reason I said that is because it's like, I so closely associate Joe with issues of being a doctor or not. So yeah, it really doesn't... Yeah, I actually probably would have preferred if he didn't become a doctor, because...
I'm okay with him becoming a doctor, because he did it for reasons that were his and not his dad's, but...
Who was never actually shown on screen, right? The dad.
Right. But we do see his brothers, and neither of them become doctors.
Oh, really? I thought one of them did.
I don't think so. Well, like, one became a doctor, but then went to Africa or something, instead of becoming a prestigious Japanese hospital doctor.
Well, anyway, yeah, so Sora, it does come out of left field. Like, she does not express interest in fashion design in the series.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's more interesting to discuss is how she went from very tomboyish things to a very feminine.
That's my issue with Sora. That's my underlying issue with it, is that, like, it's okay for her to be feminine, but at the same time, like, that became all she was, you know?
Sora's whole character is just girl.
I don't think it is in the show, but definitely in what they have so limited time to give detail at any of these updated where they end up things that it's like, yeah, it just puts them in little bins, and all of the roles that the women get are very traditionally female things. All the roles that men get are traditionally male things.
Yeah.
And that is not great. And there is, from what I've seen, other fiction from Japan, that, and what I've heard, that, like, standards of femininity in Japan are much higher than here, that, like,
yes,
people that we would consider very feminine in the U.S., like, by Japan standards, would be, like, a tomboy. And
right.
So, like...
And it's also much more rigid about it.
Mm-hmm. And like, there's much more, yeah, much more stigma about not being feminine. So yeah. It makes sense for Sora to quote unquote grow out of her tomboyishness in that kind of context.
But I don't like it.
Yeah, I think we all agree. Yeah. That, I think we all agree that's not the ideal, and we wish that weren't the case. And it's also especially like when you talk about the future, like we all kind of hope the future will be better. To paint the future as the same problems of today is kind of. It's kind of necessary because, like, I mean, we all look at things with the lens of today. It's impossible to really predict what the future is going to be like. I mean, especially, so I'm thinking now of Star Trek, and like Star Trek's also supposed to be like, you know, war has been solved and like equality and diversity has been solved, and it's like, okay, diversity has been solved because there is like a single woman and a single black person on the ship, and like
there's an Asian person too.
Oh yeah, but I mean, like it's clearly not. It's by like our standards today, we're like that actually wasn't that diverse. That actually wasn't very solved as they thought it was.
And yet it's still better than representation on most things of today.
Mm-hmm.
True. So
I actually think, isn't Yoli just like, is a mom? I think she's just
sick. Yes, so let's move on to Yoli. Yoli is much worse in that regard. they don't say what she does. No, do they say that she's, does they, she doesn't have a job or that she's a housewife?
I mean, they say what Ken does as like it's like, Ken and Yoli get married.
Yeah, Ken is a detective, and then they have a bunch of kids. Yeah, they don't say whether or not Yoli has a job apart from taking care of the kids. But the picture they have of her is her taking care of the kids.
Maybe she's in, like, some, I don't know what the Japanese equivalent of the FBI is, and can't say.
Maybe she's just a pro hacker.
Well, wouldn't they say it?
No, because it's confidential information. It's top secret. Classified.
I see.
But yeah, I mean, definitely the implication is that she is just a housewife. And also, I regret saying just a housewife, because I mean, like, especially, how many kids do they have?
It's hardcore, yeah.
It's really hard.
I say it not as a, like, housewives suck. More as a, like, Yoli expressed interest repeatedly in wanting to do a lot of things and, like, make money and be a mom.
Yeah.
And then, in the end, it's just, she's a housewife.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, there are a lot of ways that it can be justified. Like, you know, if she is into programming, she could be programming things on the side, like, you know, like doing small jobs in addition, like fitting into the nooks and crannies.
Yeah, but they should have said so.
Right, and, like, so that's the thing. It's like, how it is presented is disappointing. But also, like, and also, like, the different phases of her life, maybe 5 years now she becomes a programmer. Still, what to present is... She doesn't have a job, which, I mean, but the thing is, like, having kids and being a housewife is, like, a totally legitimate...
It's a full-time gig.
It's a totally legitimate, like, thing, like, career, not career, maybe, like, job and a dream to have. So, like, I think in the same aspect that we're, like, it makes sense that Sora could shift her priorities to want to become a fashion designer. It makes sense that Yoli would shift her priorities to want to prioritize having lots of kids over hacking and stuff. But there is...
Yeah, she can do it on the side anyway.
If there are only there's four. If there are only four girls in the cast of how many? 16? 12? 12.
12, yeah.
16. 12. Help. Math.
12. 12.
12? Okay, so there...
8 plus 4.
There's only four... Shut up. If there are only four girls in the entire cast of 12, why are all of them shown doing traditionally feminine things? And why aren't any of the boys shown doing traditionally feminine things? Like, Sora's doing clothes, Mimi's doing food, although I appreciate that she's doing it on TV and being, like, hardcore, like, business person about it. And Mimi, Yoli's doing, mom. and Kari's doing teaching of kindergarten students, no less. Like, these are all great things to do, but at the same time, like, break the mold a little, guys. Writers, come on. Come on. Why couldn't Cody be a housewife?
So, I'm not sure if teaching in Japan is female-dominated.
I don't believe it is, but I believe at the prime, at, like, a kindergarten level, it may, like, kindergarten and below, it may be. I mean, it's still associating her with children.
I think the thing with Mimi's is that, like, actually, for TV chefs, it is rare for them to be female. So that's kind of...
Yeah.
Like, cooking in the home is more associated with femininity, but the power of, like, you're a big celebrity chef is more male.
Yeah.
So I think we at least go through all this. So we talked about Joe as a doctor. We talked about Izzy being a researcher. So Ty is a diplomat, which is a natural extension of his leadership role, whatever. So this upsets a lot of people, and I actually fail to understand why that Matt becomes an astronaut. People go crazy over this. Just like, why an astronaut? I don't understand.
I'm not an astronaut.
Like, I guess there's a concern of like, why isn't he a rock star? Like, as if someone, everyone who plays in a band.
Maybe he is.
Well,
yeah, that's.
Maybe he's faking the Mars landing.
Maybe. But it's also like, yeah, people who are musicians normally don't make that. As a career.
Yeah.
And I mean, people who want to be astronauts as kids also don't make that. But also, like...
Yeah, but, like, people become astronauts.
Right, there's a winding path between 14, and it's really not out of the blue. And so a lot of people defend this with, like, oh, there was a, like, there's a rumor of an idea that the third season of Adventure... There was going to be a third season of Adventure that was going to focus on outer space enemies, and this was, like, an homage to that. And... Maybe?
What?
I mean, that seems like a crazy rumor, and maybe it's true, but, like, why do we need that justification? Like, why is being an astronaut not a valid, like, it...
I don't understand how he could be that young and be an astronaut.
It's possible.
Yeah?
In his, like, mid-30s?
It's hard to do. There's a lot of training that goes into becoming
an astronaut. I feel like they probably don't want people who are that much older than that because of physical ability.
Wait, how many years after was the epilogue?
25? He'd be, like, almost 40, actually.
Wait, it was 25 years later?
Yeah.
I thought it was less than that.
For astronauts, there are no age restrictions for the programs. Astronaut candidates selected in the past have ranged between the ages of 26 and 46, with the average age being 34.
Hmm. Okay. All right.
From the official NASA site.
All right. I accept this then.
But yeah, the line about him going to the moon, the Mars instead of the moon, is just ridiculous, and that's terrible. So Ken is a detective.
I'm okay with that.
And Cody is a defense attorney.
Okay with that.
What I like this arrangement of Ken and Cody is they were initially did not get along, and they are still on opposing sides of the courtroom.
It's true.
So that was a cool detail that I noticed this time around.
Now only Joe has to worry about Cody.
Why?
Because he's a doctor.
He's a defense lawyer. He's not necessarily a malpractice lawyer. Actually, he's not necessarily a... Well, I guess he is necessarily a criminal lawyer, if he's a defense lawyer. No.
But not a criminal lawyer, as they say in Breaking Bad. Anyway, but I like how Cody doesn't just follow his father's footsteps, doesn't become a cop. He, like, does something different. And a lot of people complain that, like, this comes out of nowhere, that, like, Cody is the one who has a very strict moral code. He wouldn't be a defense attorney. And I think they missed that, like, part of the arc of Cody, especially in this arc in particular, is him coming to terms with that. He starts off being extremely judgmental of Ken and not accepting him. He eventually learns to accept Ken, and then even is the only one, the first one to accept Oikawa and to, like, go to him once they're celebrating. And that's, like, what I see as the first step towards him becoming someone who protects the people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Also, he becomes Phoenix, right?
Also, he's 8.
You're 8.
He is also 8. Your face is 8.
Okay.
I almost forgot to mention Davis, because, I mean, Davis, he just...
Davis opens a noodle cart. And becomes a successful businessman.
He gets on the cover of Time.
Maybe that's what Yoli's doing. She's helping Davis run his business, because, like, I can't see him doing that.
Yoli is doing everything behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly.
But we don't know.
Okay. So we're all here again. We took a long break in the middle of recording, so we had too much to cover for this epilogue. There's not epilogue, it's for the ending in general. I think it's interesting how much there is to cover in this. I don't know how much you guys agree with that. I feel like there's so much more to discuss than there was in the first season.
I agree.
Because they dump all the things that have been happening in the last 5 episodes. They're like, oh, you thought you knew, but you didn't know. You had no idea.
It's also a matter of we have the first season to go back to and compare. So there's just more in general to work with.
True. Yeah. I don't know how much it is the plot being condensed. Because I feel like we haven't talked much about plot.
It's like Blackboard Greymon comes back, does the thing. Find out Myotismon came back. Oikawa's being manipulated.
Sure, all that stuff happens, but I mean, I feel like that's not... Most of the stuff we've been talking about has been, like, not based on plot. It's been based on themes that were explored in the last couple episodes. The last 5 episodes of Adventure, like, Shinjimon gets destroyed, then they fight Paimon, they, like, lose Matt, find Matt, lose Sora, find Sora, lose all the kids to keychains, then Magna Angemon.
That all in the last 5 episodes. I don't think
Mimi raises an army.
It is. Yes, it is. The Paimon arc is only 3 episodes, and there's Apocalypse, the last 2. The last Machine Jamon episode, everything after that is the last 5 episodes. So one thing I forgot to mention when we talked last time, and I'll see where this fits into the actual podcast and my decision at the end of a different segment, but we talked about how the show seems to be pushing this dichotomy between power and loneliness. That, like, if you are seeking power, you are doing it at the cost of friendship and connections to others. But I thought, what I found strange was that both Oikawa and the Dark Spore kids, like, they overlook simple things like being happy and having friends and everything because they're reaching for something more. Oikawa is trying to, like, achieve his childhood dream of going to the digital world and, you know, seeing Digimon and everything and making Digimon. And the Dark Spore kids, you know, they have a dream too of being smart and being as smart as Ken. And they're foregoing happiness and friendship to get that. And I feel like that kind of conflicts with the message in the end, which is about pursuing your dreams and ambitions and aspirations, given that they were kind of doing that from the start.
No, because there's always this difference of, like if you pursue your dreams, you do need people. Like, you're not going to be a jerk to people. It's not saying you don't follow your dreams. It's just, like, you do not follow it in this way, because it will never work.
I guess so. And, yeah, and I feel like there is a, if you, like, look at everything that's laid out, you're like, okay, well, the dreams, I don't know, Oikawa's dream was pretty decent, but then it was corrupted because it was grief. And the Dark Spore kids, their dream was, like, not good. Like, their dream initially was, like, we want to measure up to Ken. It was, like, a dream based on jealousy, not on any, like, thing about themselves. And we talked before about how they, like, kind of get lumped together in that they all want the same thing initially, and it's only later on when they realize they want different things. So I can see the, like, maybe they're saying they're at the wrong dreams, but I can, in the end, like, find, like, reasons why the two different messages aren't really the same thing, why they're not really conflicting. But I feel like the show didn't do a good job of laying out the, like, you know, in the end it's like, believe in your dreams and aspirations and everything, and, like, doesn't really address that, like, that's kind of what they were doing before and got them in this mess.
I don't know. It's one thing to, you know, have an idea of what you yourself want to be, and it's another thing to pursue an ideal that has been pushed on you, especially when there's a difference between pursuing a vocation and pursuing power.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't say the Dark Spore kids were pursuing power.
You wouldn't?
Okay, I guess different different kind
they
of power.
They were pursuing superiority. How about that? Like, their ideal was, I want to be better than other people, while all the dreams were about being people.
True. Yeah, and I don't know, I guess I feel conflicted about this, because I'm not, like, I think there is, once you dig below the surface, it does separate things. It does make sense. But the on the surface level, so I don't know if that's really a fault of the show. That, because, I mean, if you just look at it on the surface, it makes sense. If you look at it a little bit below the surface, it looks contradictory. And if you go even further, it doesn't contradict itself. So I guess there's not really a problem, as the way I phrased it.
It's, I mean, they sort of crammed a bunch of ideas in at once and didn't really sort any of them out. I think that's the problem here.
And yeah, it's kind of what we're doing. What we're doing is sorting the ideas out, so that the show doesn't do it itself. And I mean, I kind of like that, as it's definitely so much more, don't want to say the word interesting, so much more to discuss, and so much, I think that's more, okay, I'm just going to keep a page, I'm just going to keep thesaurus.com for interesting open.
I was counting this episode.
Okay, I think that'll actually be funny, because some of them will just not fit at all. So, okay. So, I mean, I think it definitely makes 02, or especially the ending of 02, so much more alluring. I mean, I find it cool when, even if something isn't as good as, if you, like, compare things, you're like, well, I like this thing better than that thing, but there's so much more to discuss about the other thing that definitely makes better podcast material. And I think maybe if I didn't like watching 02 as much, like, it definitely made discussing it, I feel like I have had a more enriching experience when discussing 02.
Cool.
I feel like these last 5 episodes were perfectly fine to watch. It's just a lot of stuff.
That can go in the box set. Perfectly fine to watch.
Yes. A glowing review. This is how I write my script reviews. Perfectly fine to read.
I like season 2.
Yes, we know, Asher.
So the other thing I wanted to mention was how, and it's that theme of like pursuing dreams. The conclusion I came to with the show is kind of saying that it's, in addition to Oikawa's dream kind of being corrupted and the kid's dream kind of being coming from the wrong place initially before they, you know, make the dreams about what they truly want, their vocations and everything. But in addition to that, they were pursuing it at the expense of everything else. That the show is kind of endorsing a balance between those. And that is something that I personally have struggled with so much. I mean, oh, just like the feeling of like not feeling complete unless you like do something big and like seek excellence, but then putting all that work to do it and then being like, I don't have time to watch TV or play games or see friends. Like this has been like the Jeff story for the past year.
This is Jeff making this podcast.
Yeah, really. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I mean, not just a podcast.
I mean, I wouldn't say the podcast isn't part of it.
Podcast is definitely part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the podcast, it's weird because, I mean, like, in one aspect, a lot of this I do for it is, like, really stressful in putting in lots of hours of doing stuff, but also it is inherently a social and fun thing to do, to record the podcast. So I wouldn't say it's all bad.
Nothing is always all bad.
That's true. I wasn't just thinking about the podcast. Like, I'm just thinking of, like, I have all these things I want to do and, like, well, if I just spend my time learning all this and trying to do all these things, and like, I won't actually, even if they're, it's a difference between like wanting the result and liking the process to get there.
Everybody likes to have written. Nobody likes writing. Everybody likes to have exercise. Nobody likes to exercise.
I like exercising.
Yeah, those are not true. People like exercising. It releases endorphins.
No. Nobody wants, no, people get up and they're like, I don't really want to like, there's inertia that happens in that.
Yeah.
If you are not exercising, you do not want to exercise.
I like exercising because I watch sports anime while I do it.
Wow.
That's the trick.
I just play DDR, which is always fun. Arrows, they tell me what to do. It's amazing.
But people like writing. I mean, it's not a universal truth that everyone hates writing. Or at least people say they like writing. I don't know if they're telling the truth.
Asher likes writing. See, even Asher doesn't like writing.
No, I prefer having written.
Well, I'm trying to remember if it was, I think it was John Green, who I remember seeing a video being like, oh my god, I love writing, I can't wait to get back to writing. Maybe that's a lie.
Well, I mean, but no, I believe there are people that like writing.
Yeah.
I believe there are people that like exercising, too. But I think
if we're talking in majorities.
Yeah, it is much more rewarding to have finished.
Oh yeah, let's talk majorities. Let's just like write off the minorities. Just like, who cares about them?
Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. Men, they're a minority of the population. Screw those guys.
I didn't realize we were now a meninist podcast. No, wait.
No, we're not a meninist
podcast. I get that word so confused.
If we erase minorities, I'm gone. Like, I have been erased from existence. I'm just too many minorities to exist. Like, there is nothing I am that is a majority.
I love when people use the argument against SJWs of, like, the segment of the population that's your fighting is just, they're like 1%, so who cares about them? It's just like, what? If you segment anybody into like enough boxes, you'll get to 1% of the population. Segmentation is bad, don't do it.
So we talked about the epilogue, but we kind of skirted around the topic of how we think about the ending overall. Like, how does this work as an ending for 0-2?
What do you think, Jeffrey?
I'm realizing I did not have the thing set up. I need to set up. How do I think this works in ending? I did not write down my thoughts because I assumed everyone else would say things and I'd react.
I really like the ending. Well, not the epilogue exactly, but like,
the ending was fine and yeah.
The ending, I feel, wrapped up a lot of things.
I like the callbacks to like having the older kids and family go to the campsite.
Yeah, I didn't realize they went back to camp. I think this was the first time I actually noticed that.
They even
I just like never registered. I know they mention it. I don't think I was ever listening. Like, never cared.
And the wave for me was like,
yeah, that I noticed. Like, I noticed it was the same animation thing going on, but I didn't like realize they went back to camp.
Only in an ending will a show be praised for reusing animation from the past.
It's true.
I guess.
But yeah, I mean, I like having the parents there too, because we haven't, well, It's weird because, like, they were there, but they didn't really, they weren't, they were just, and they were just background. They were just decoration. They weren't really there. They didn't contribute to the story, or I don't even think they had any lines, but it was nice to see them at least. And I mean, I feel in some ways that it was more conclusive of an ending, ignoring the epilogue, than Adventure. But in other ways, the send-off of the Adventure Kids was so much more emotional. There really wasn't a send-off.
It wasn't a send-off because they still see each other.
Yeah. Well, okay. So a send-off, I don't mean like a send-off of like the kids versus the Digimon. I mean like that, because there is that in Adventure. But that send-off of the kids from the Digimon is a send-off for us of the kids leaving, like the show ending, you know? And because they don't separate, then like we don't get that for 02.
No, we just get an epilogue that makes us all mad. Isn't that better?
Or at least the shippers.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Ash, how do you like it better than the Adventure ending?
Well, Apocklymon sucks as a final villain. Like,
well, he disappears out of nowhere.
Exactly. At least Malamiotismon, you know, we have a history.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
They're old flames that just can't get over each
other. He's that guy you just can't ignore.
And a lot of my dislike for Apocklymon comes from the dub. But, I mean, there's a lot there that just, you know, like, inherent in the story structure of him coming out of nowhere could never really be forgiven.
I mean, there's a little bit of that with Myotismon still here, of, like, you think you have a grasp of what's going on, finally, and then Black War Greymon's like, no, it's you! And you're like, what? What's happening?
I forgive that, though, because it is... It does something with that. Like, it makes that about redeeming Oikawa, as opposed to, like, revealing Apocklymon just being, like, just so there's more episodes. Like, revealing Apocklymon didn't do anything to change the Piedmon stuff at all. That was just another final boss.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a large part of why, like, I do like the 02 ending better than the 01. I like the 01 ending. I don't know why I'm calling it 01. I do like the adventure ending.
You'll get a lot of pedantic people just being like, it's not called 01.
No, yeah, you're just discredited.
I've been discredited from the start.
Wait, so when you say the ending, do you mean the final battle? Or just...
I just mean like how the series wraps up generally. I'm sort of ignoring the epilogue a little bit because I don't feel like that's the best part of the ending. But like, I'm okay with the epilogue for the most part. I don't really like epilogues in general, like, to start with. But, I mean, the 02 ending is happy. Like, the kids get to be with their Digimon. Everybody gets a Digimon. The two worlds work together. Like, that's much more uplifting than the end of Adventure, where you leave this crazy dream that only lasted a day, basically. I mean, okay, Oikawa's dead. Big deal.
That's true, yeah.
No, he's not dead.
I forgot about him.
He is okay, the digital world!
He's the thing protecting the digital world.
Yes.
What's more happy than butterflies?
Nothing is more happy than rainbow butterflies.
Wrong version, Jeff.
What's wrong with the version?
There you go, that's it.
So 02 is actually like a much more uplifting ending, and... Actually, what was the last shot before the epilogue? I can't remember.
The butterflies.
The butterflies.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was butterflies.
Butterfly in the sky.
Yes.
Do-do-do-do-do. Reading Rainbow?
Maybe.
What are we talking about anymore?
Butterfly in the sky.
I can go twice as high. Father just reacts.
So, we only had two new Digimon this time, which I guess makes sense. This is a weird how crammed in they were in other arcs, and then this time it's just like, boom. Anyway.
So one of them is a new old Digimon?
Well, yes. So the first is Malamiotismon. What do we all think about Malamiotismon?
His design is, what is it?
Yeah, I don't actually like Malamiotismon's design at all.
I don't get it.
Malamiotismon should have just stayed the way he was originally.
I love it. Like, it's so random.
Venom Malamiotismon didn't need to happen.
Yeah, both the like upgrades of Malamiotismon are fairly... It loses what the charm of Myotismon was, which was not being just a crazy beast.
Yeah, like, his whole... I think part of what makes Myotismon such a, like...
Jerk?
You don't think of him... No, I don't think... even now, I still can't think of Myotismon as, like, this ultimate force. He's very much, like, a fallible person. And,
That seems like a stretch.
No, like, he shouldn't be like that, because he's super, like, he's one of the strongest villains ever they've ever faced. And I don't just mean, like power-wise. Like, as a driving force behind the series, I'd say he's been the most successful both times he's made an appearance. But, like, he never seems all-powerful to me. I think because he's one of the more human-looking ones originally, and he has very... I talked about this last season, and his fascination with, like, both worlds, the human and the digital world, I don't remember any other villain caring about the human world in these two seasons. Yeah.
So, is that really... Well, Daemon appeared but he didn't...
What was Daemon's deal, even? Like,
He just wanted Ken.
And we don't even know why.
Unclear. Unclear final goal.
Something about the spore, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or he just really likes Ken. Maybe he's a crush.
Anyway, I'm looking at this, and I'm trying to figure out if I like Malo Myotismon or Venom Myotismon better, and I can't.
Oh, I totally like Malo Myotismon better.
I'm just looking at this, and I'm just thinking Justice Gundam.
He kind of does look like a Gundam.
Specifically the Justice Gundam.
From Seed?
Yeah.
Did it have the shoulder things? Is that what's...
Well, no, but it has the stupid backpack.
Ah, yeah. Look, if you guys can talk about Yu-Gi-Oh!, we can talk about Gundam.
Yeah. Venom Myotismon is just so... I don't know, like, the kind of imagery it uses does not appeal to me. It's just, like, evil. Like, at least Malo Myotismon is, like, weird.
Yeah.
And he, like, has all these different mouths and stuff, and...
I guess I like Malo Myotismon a little better than Venom Myotismon.
Anything's better than Venom Myotismon.
I don't like his face. I mean, I don't like Myotismon's face either, but...
At least I, like, understand where... Venom Myotismon came from more than Malo Myotismon.
Do you like that better? That I like that he's weird and not just kind of cookie cutter beast.
Yeah, but why did... I guess the question is never why, but why not? I retract my question. What? I do like the shoulder mouth things. Those are appropriately creepy.
They remind me of spiders.
Yeah, it's supposed to, I think.
Yeah. It looks like Dokugumon, kind of.
Because of the eyes.
Oh, yeah. It's the eyes. Eye placement. And he has a weird yin-yang symbol on his jetpack thingy. It's more like a mask that looks evocative of yin-yang.
He's got a lot of things going on.
But just, like, a lot of things thrown together.
His crotch is a dragon, for one thing.
Something like that.
Oh.
He upgraded his crotch after dying from getting hit in the crotch.
His crotch is a dragon. I retract my statement about Black War Greymon's butt and insert that my favorite gag there is Malo Myotismon's crotch.
Oh god.
Don't do this to me.
Maybe he ran into, like, the army? Because it kind of reminds me of that. You know, like, putting sharks on, like, planes.
What?
I don't know, like...
Like, the image and not like, actual sharks on planes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Like, it's just, like, an intimidating display.
Oh.
Not like flying sharks.
Oh, like, I see. Okay.
I was confused.
Like that. I thought you meant, like, sharks.
I was like, why is a shark on a plane?
Like snakes on a plane, too, or something.
Snakes on a plane, too. Sharks.
Okay, so is that enough for Malo Myotismon? Yes. Move on to the next one?
Yeah. Yeah, we're good.
Dateerimon.
I like Dateerimon. It's very cute, and I want it.
It's like a ball with a leaf.
That is exactly what it is.
I want to eat it.
You want to eat
it? It looks like it's a grape.
Ashley, that's very amusing. What is that it? The thing Ash wants, you just want to eat. I don't know.
Maybe that's why our tastes and things are different. Oh, it's actually named Peepimon in Japanese.
Wasn't this thing a fan contest? Digimon?
Oh, I think it may have been.
Its English name originated from a competition run by YTV where the winner got the chance to name this Digimon.
Wow.
It is said to appear to humans who have regained once lost wishes.
Wait, Jeffrey, okay, were we saying that the animation was good in the second Black War Greymon episode?
No. It was the second last episode that had the good animation, I believe. It's the one where they have the illusions.
Good, because I animation. Took this funny picture, and I remember showing it to you, being like, what is up with their faces?
Oh, no, wait, Ashley, I have a better one of that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's the same scene. Actually, I just realized looking at my notes, I had
I think I just
happened to pause there and was like, this looks weird.
I actually had a bullet point to explain the React segment, like explain how it's reacting to things, but I put it in the middle of the segment. That was stupid. Oh, no, sorry. It's not this. No, it is kind of this. It's like a little bit later. Yeah, their faces are just like a little off quality in this, a little off model.
Oh, yeah. The animation in this part of the episode
it's like
was
everybody's. So.
Yeah.
Yes. So, we forgot to mention that it's when Kari and Tai are standing like facing Black Orgamon after they've come through the portal to Mount Fuji.
There were a couple minutes where it was like this.
So I took a screenshot of a couple like a minute after that when Wargreymon's there facing down Black Orgamon, and Tai's face in this image is just like Tai's face is just like completely flattened, like it's not like a good face anymore. But
I don't take issue with this. His face definitely looks weirder than the one that I.
I guess so. So this is my favorite one from the episode, which is from earlier when they're actually in the digital world looking at the like things that Black Orgamon has destroyed. And I especially like it in lieu of how much people complain about Agumon's new design and try. And Agumon's face is just it's a really, I'm pretty sure it's a really bad in-between frame where like there were keyframes drawn of Agumon having his head turn one way and another keyframe would turn the other way. And then they give it to like lower quality animators to draw the in-between frames. And it's just really hard to do that. So it's just
awkward.
Like someone punched it in or something.
That's great.
How slow did you put your video at to get
well,
that?
Well, I noticed it as I was watching it because I was like, the whole, you could tell the quality was just worse in general.
Right.
But then I was like able to pause it at that moment. And the last one I have from that episode, these are all just like in the category, episode 46 animation goofs. So Patamon's face in this picture, when it's like they've all de-digivolved or chasing Arakani Mamon, Patamon's face is just like melting in TK's arms.
Oh, I noticed this.
Like it looks like the eyes like fell apart and... It's really sad looking. So apparently the animation director for these episodes, for the episode 46, was Masahiro Naoi. So I kind of feel bad for the person. I don't know if it's lower. Maybe it's had no lower budget.
In this picture, Cody does not look enthusiastic. His arm is not raised. And also, why TK's glasses? I think this is TK's apartment. They are all very color coordinated. It's very impressive.
His mom seems to be a pretty organized person.
Okay. It's very strange.
I like how there's only, like, one row each.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Right. So they're in TK's apartment cheering. They're like, excited to do something. And, like, everyone's arms are all raised high except for Cody. Cody's just like, yeah.
He has a smile on his face, but his arm says something different.
But Cody's always been the reserved one.
This is so new to me. I have so many unanswered questions.
Is there an explanation for why the copies of the Dark Spore are imperfect, aside from the fact that we're supposed to believe that copying technology makes things imperfect the more you copy them?
Yeah, that seemed logical.
No, that's the reason. That's the reason. There's no other reason.
I didn't question that.
Well, I mean, Oikawa also could have tampered with it to make it go faster in order to hasten his return to the digital world. Or his, not his return, well, whatever.
Yeah, his part of his return, part
trip.
Of his...
His trip to the digital world.
His field trip. Oh, they basically go on a field trip. I should have used that in the recap. Anyway. So my first question is from episode 46. Arakenimon breaks open a door by pulling off the handle? Like, that's not how doors work. And they made a line about this in the dub, about like how it doesn't make sense. Like,
or at least it doesn't work for that kind of door.
Well, so Oikawa says, I think that opens in. And then Arakenimon's like, it does now. But like, that door does not... She didn't change the lock. She just pulled off the handle and then pushed it in. Oh, Arakenimon.
I mean, if it was... I don't know. It seems like the type of door that would only be locked...
That's not how that kind of door...
Yeah, it would require some sort of, like, chain.
Yeah,
so
it would require a deadbolt.
Yeah, so if you, like, broke off the handle, I could see, actually, potentially being...
No, this kind of door wouldn't do that. I think it's open.
Yeah, I think it, well, okay, there could be a chain connecting the two bars below the camera that she's, like, disconnecting the handle.
No, I think on the other side, and then if you tear off one of the...
Oh, you think it would fall down?
Yeah.
Huh, that's possible.
This doesn't make any sense.
I don't think that they're, like, connected like that. I don't think one falls off on the other side, because one came off the other side. They seem like it's connected to the door itself, not to each other.
It doesn't look like there's anything on the other side, at least on the other door. I think this door is just open.
This is probably like someone spent like 5 seconds animating this and
I think, yeah, I'm assuming that the door was just open, and she just didn't know that it opened inwards and just ripped off the handle and then was like, whatever, fine.
Yeah, so what does it say about life that we think things are push, we think things are pulled, but and we pull so hard, but all we need to do is push. We're grasping for things that we will never reach, and
we make things harder for themselves. We make things harder for ourselves than they need to be.
Yeah.
You didn't make that sufficiently pretentious.
But on the other hand, it means we are strong enough to yank a door handle off of the door, and that in and of itself Hell is yeah. an accomplishment.
That's very curious.
Oh my God, Jeff. I'm going to start counting those, too, in the count.
That was one of the better synonyms, though.
That was one of the better synonyms. Have you used fascinating yet?
I don't know where that is on this list. Oh, it's down a couple. Just wait for it. A couple minutes.
Okay, all right.
Okay, what was the deal with... Okay, this is all contained in episode 47, but what was the
I don't know.
The entire, like, the pixel floor screen thing the partner Digimon are excavating, which happens to display Black Grandma after he dies, like, what?
That
what?
Was pretty confused by what that was.
That was the Heightened View Terrace gate, apparently.
But why?
It's what? That thing! That was never, there's no, but...
Not a thing.
Did they say that, or is like that the logical conclusion? That makes sense. In a it's twisted, that was never explained, but like
is the answer.
But like, they don't ever explain why the partner Digimon are there initially, right? Like, there's like digging up something. Do they get together regularly? Like, do they have parties all the time? We don't see. Like, this is the first time we see them just hanging out together. I guess they all went back to the digital world together. Oh, I already mentioned earlier how there are not millions of kids. There are 80 lines of light. Because I should put in the show notes the image I used for that.
I can't believe you sat here and counted this.
It's not that hard.
Oh my gosh.
How could you even see individual lines for some of them?
Well, so some of them are kind of a guess, right? Like, kind of inferring based on the rate of the other lines. It's really not like they're in like clusters of five anyway for a lot of them.
Go on.
Anyway, what happens to the Deuterium now that Oikawa's dead?
Nothing.
Yeah, just gets to be a Digimon, right? Go live in the digital world. Talk to butterflies.
Yeah, I guess there are a lot of Digimon who do that. Oh yeah, they hang out butterfly and Digimon all the time.
I'm just like, where did all the darkness that Melomyotismon spread over the real world go? Did it just disappear because he stopped beaming it up?
I think the Digivice has dispelled all of it.
Yeah.
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 I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Why couldn't it do that to the digital world, then?
The digital world was already all messed up before Malamyotismon got there. I guess the implication was that... Jenai said that a lot of the digital world's energy got used to stop Malamyotismon. I think also there was a slight indication that Black War Greymon was going around blowing stuff up for some reason in, like, episode 46.
Really?
I could not decide. Like, I was like... That no, I'm like, because he doesn't...
He has no reason to.
Yeah, he has no reason to be blowing things up. But, like, he also... The control spider is supposed to, like, have this negative energy that, like, maybe because the energy was given away from Azumon, maybe his, like, just his presence is destroying things and ripping holes in the world. But they definitely... they showed craters and stuff that imply that he was making them. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
I don't know if they knew what they were intending with that, because it may have been like, Black War Greymon, he's evil.
Yeah.
Craters.
Ridiculous dialogue, Jeff. We go around and each pick our top two funniest, most ridiculous, or most touching lines from the episodes. You, dearest audience, choose a winner on podigious.com/, I don't know, what episode is this, 210? Because there's a poll there, and it has lots of pretty pictures. Shut up, Jeffrey!
Beat the heat with... voting on our poll.
Jeffrey thinks this is a sports draft, and it's not. This is not a sport.
Okay, so my first one is episode 46, and it's... I can't remember where they're like, in someone's house, figuring out what to do, I think. It might be, like, Yuli has a plan at that point, but anyway. Kari gets, like, an email on her D-terminal or whatever, and it makes, like, a notification noise. And Gatomon reacts to it by going, like...
You ever not get mail?
It was, like, such a, like... snarky, angry response.
The word you're looking for is catty, Jeff.
Oh! Hang up now. Goodbye. We're done.
But, like, I feel like at the time we wouldn't... at the time when we thought of like email notification, it was like, you've got mail or like ridiculous notices. And like only since then has it become like, I feel like it's much more of a modern thing to be like annoyed by notification noises that are like subtle. Because it was just like a little like chime. It wasn't some obnoxious thing, but.
Jeff is offended.
I'm not offended.
My turn. What? Okay.
You're putting words in my mouth.
You're offended because you get a jillion notification noises. How dare anybody think they're annoying?
Yeah.
Go on, Asher.
All right. So this one is from episode 47, and the kids have just caught up with Oikawa and Arukenimon and Mamimon, I guess. I guess at the temple? I don't remember. But Arukenimon actually says,
"Hey, Kyandramon, I want to watch you get your bucket."
And I was like, finally, finally, someone made this joke. It wasn't just us. It was in the original thing. The bucket joke was there. It was there.
I didn't make that connection. That's very engaging.
It's, wow. Okay, Jeff, you need to put that thesaurus list down.
Yeah, I was trying too hard. I should only use it when I would actually say the I word.
But you would have said the I word there. No, you wouldn't have. Maybe you would have. I don't know. I guess you were thinking about it.
I don't think I would have.
Anyway.
Well, I'm thinking about it because this list is on my screen.
Okay. Mine is from episode 49. Mm-hmm. I guess it has to be towards the end because it's Davis telling XBmon to fight. And Davis says,
"Just imagine, it's the last minute of a soccer game and it's you against the goalie. You know what to do, right?"
Not a clue!
That actually wasn't towards the end.
Oh, it wasn't? It was towards the beginning?
Yeah.
I think it is before the illusion.
Because it's before the kids
get it is
wiped.
It's when he's... When everybody's like, "No, we can't fight," Davis is like, "I'll show you," like.
And then he proceeds to show them, like, good for you, Davis.
Not to be right for once.
Yeah. Andrew?
Okay, mine is actually bizarre. Okay, so.
That's not on my list.
Well.
I can give you one from the bottom of my list. Suspicious, pleasurable, magnetic. Sorry, go on.
No.
Outlandish. Okay, the one I chose is in episode 48 when Myosmon's about to appear and Gatomon says,
"That voice!
What?
I steal your dead voice in my nightmares!"
And then, that's actually not my quote. My ridiculous dialogue is that cut, where it's just this long shot and Gatomon is still talking, but there's no sound.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I did notice that.
Andrew, that's kind of hard to get across in a podcast, in a purely auditory format.
No.
It's a little difficult.
Okay, the whole thing is my ridiculous dialogue.
Okay.
So it's...
That's okay, he can lose the poll. Fine.
He can lose the poll, yeah.
No, fine. It's still the whole thing where it's that voice. What? I still hear that voice in my nightmares. Myotismon! But I just like it because you could put so many... Like, Gatomon could be, like, bad-mouthing Myotismon for all you know.
Calling him names.
All right.
Not safe for children's television.
My name is from episode 49, and I don't remember at what point... I guess it's after they're actually out of the illusion, they're just fighting Myotismon. Myotismon. And he... No, because I guess it's before that. I can't remember when it is. I think it's before that, before they're in the illusions. And I think he, like, attacks XVmon or something. And Myotismon just says...
"Oops! I think I broke your friends!"
I do remember that. I don't know where it is.
It's just, like the matter-of-fact, like... I think it might be, like, him referring to how they're, like, so crippled with fear that they don't want to fight.
Yeah, I think it was... Yeah, it was before the illusion thing.
Yeah, it's too depressing to be after the illusion thing.
Yeah.
Asher.
Me. Okay. This is from the epilogue. And
oh God,
it's Izzy. It's Izzy with his daughter. And he says,
"Make sure you don't act like a ram cat."
Right. Or a thim chip.
I don't think these are things. Are these things, Jeff?
I've never understood what they were saying, and this time I tried to write it down for this, like, for my RDD picks or whatever, and I'm like, I thought she was saying Simchip, not Zimchip, but like, at least like Sim is a thing.
What is,
like a, like,
what is the problem with acting like a Simchip, or what is a Ram Cat?
I mean, Ram is a thing, so
what does it mean to act like these things?
I guess the point was that they had their own language that makes no sense, but like, I mean, the thing is, Izzy's technobabble has never made sense, so it kind of is fitting.
But at least I recognized the words before. I don't, these aren't words.
I think they were going for like futuristic, maybe these will be a thing in the future. Zimchips could still happen.
Well.
As could Ramcats.
Aren't we almost 20 years in the future?
Well, it was 25 years. No.
There's just 10 more years.
25 years? All right. I'll look out for those Ram Cats.
It's 2027 or 2028.
Okay.
Is the expected year.
All right.
Depending on what timeline you believe.
I'm going to set myself an alarm.
I'm still waiting for my giant robots in the year 2000.
2028. Ram Cats. What team? Ram Cats.
Yeah, that totally sounds. See, that should be a sports team.
Yes.
We made it about sports. Okay, anyway.
That's what I do these days.
My pick is from, where is this? I guess it's in the very beginning of episode 50 with the older kids in the real world. And I guess they're concerned about what's happening to the 02 kids. So Ty is like,
hey, I've got an idea. Digiport open! Please?
I guess our parents were wrong. That's not the magic word after all.
But no, every other time in this show, putting up your Digivice and saying whatever usually works. Good try.
It does usually work.
That did work in the end, eventually, though.
Well,
I mean, like, eventually them just raising their Digivices did work.
That after Myers Montour hole in the sky, yeah.
But no, I totally missed, like, I was like, I somehow missed the word please, so I was like, how is Digiport open the magic words? I don't get this joke. Huh.
He definitely says please.
Wow.
He definitely says please.
That makes a lot more sense.
He does. I actually put this down myself, but I totally didn't hear Matt's line afterwards.
Yeah, it only works if you hear all of it, guys.
All right, Andrew?
I don't know.
Do you need to borrow one of mine?
No. I just don't know because there's one from 46 and one from 47. Should I go with the funnier one?
Yes.
Yes.
Or the one that mentions potatoes.
Oh, the funnier one.
Well, now you're going to have to say both of them.
Or you could go that route.
Okay, I'll start with the one in episode 47. And Noriko is having this weird inner monologue. And she says,
without the darkspore, I just become an ordinary bumpkin. Small potatoes doomed to a life of mediocrity. Now I'll be able to rise above the crowd.
There's a lot of mixed metaphors in there.
I do like the potatoes.
Potatoes.
I was hoping it was going to end with, like, I would be small potatoes, but, like, now I will be a glorious bowl of french fries or something. Like, that's what I took from Digimon.
Yeah, I thought it would carry the metaphor, but then it was like, I'm just going to mix metaphors instead.
You can find the show notes for this episode at patagers.com/210. Go there to vote on the RDD poll, submit your own unanswered questions and RDD picks, leave and read feedback in the comment section, or find thorough notes on everything we mentioned on the podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook to get lots of extra images, GIFs, and other fun stuff related to the show. You can also send us feedback on social media or in the discussion threads for the podcast on With the Will and reddit.com/r/Digimon. I'm Jeff on Twitter, Ashley's AshMcD00 on Twitter, and Asher's AsherDashery on Tumblr. If you like the show, subscribe and leave a review on iTunes and share it with your friends. If your friends don't like Digimon, trap them in a fantasy illusion world where you watch Digimon with them 24/7. Join us next time as we discuss the first 02 movie, Hurricane Touchdown, or the final segment of Digimon the Movie. On Podigis, 02 heads are better than one. Bye.
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 And remember, never stop Digimon.
Oh, Ashley, I found some good,
drugs?
Soundboard clips.
Supreme Darkness!
Yes!
Darkness.
What is that?
Darkness.
Darkness.
Darkness. Darkness.
Darkness. Is that my Otis song?
No, it's Ansem from Kingdom Hearts.
Right, darkness. Okay.
also, so this is Ansem's.
Supreme Darkness!
This is Sora's reply.
I know now. Without
Kingdom Hearts is light!
Kingdom Hearts is light!
I'm so
for
excited.
A second, I thought that was Ashley.
The voice is very high pitched.
Haley Joel Osment.
I'm kind of afraid to like compare that voice to like what he sounds like in the new Kingdom Hearts games.
Oh, he hit puberty in between 1 and 2. I can tell you that much.
I mean, his age like doubled, right? Like,
yeah,
no,
it's super different.
It was super different, but like, there was like what, 5 years between the games?
No, between 1 and like 3D though. I was thinking 3D.
Oh, I don't know.
3D has been a lot of years.
But I mean, his voice already changed by the second one, so was.
Yeah.
I guess, but do the voices not get deeper even after puberty or whatever?
Wow, Kingdom Hearts is 13 years old.
Yeah.
We should bribe them with free hugs.
No.
No.
Yes.
We should bribe them by saying... on your Ash, I got this one just for you.
Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm.
Do you recognize it?
Mm-hmm.
It's Ken's whimper.
Oh, is that my...
It sounds weird out of context, I guess.
It does, because there's the dramatic music in the background that's kind of ruining it.
I don't know what this one is.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, that's Cody's grandpa.
Oh, right.
Let's go.
What's this one?
Jeffrey! With the Digi!
Welcome to Prejudice episode 210. Welcome to Prejudice episode 210. Fly me to the moon and let me play among the Fly me to the moon and let me play among the Serato.
What is she doing? I mean, she's like a kid actor. So, like, the point is to be ridiculous, but... And she's dressed up like Sora? Like...
Oh...
I assume that's what that bucket hat's supposed to be.
You're just covering Ty's face, like...
Like, do they have this every episode?
They're like, you don't need to actually see.
There's also some of our, like, the class of, like... She's an adult, right? Like, she's an adult who's acting for this kid's thing. Like you know, people like the guy in Blue's Clues and stuff that have to, like, act for these kids' things and, like, be super silly and... That's such a bizarre... It must be a weird job.
Her eyes are scary there for a second.
She's scary in throat.
Nah, she's okay.
She is
okay.
Before we started recording feedback, I told Ashley that there was a bombshell. I didn't tell her what it was. I just told her something that was going to shock her and blow her mind away. So do you remember? So speaking of diversity and racial representation in Shaman King, do you remember the, I don't know if there's a word for this, but the like.
I do believe I know which character you are talking about.
I'm trying to think, I can't remember what his actual dialogue was, but I remember the thing that is particularly offensive about it is the way they draw his lips. So we're talking about Chocolove. Also the name is kind of, it's pretty bad. But here's the bombshell, Ashley. Do you know his last name?
No. I didn't even remember
What would you guess his last name is?
Oh, man. Is it something, like, horribly offensive?
No. It's more personal. What do you think his last name is? Come on, guess. You have to guess.
I don't know.
Come on.
Ruberg. No.
What?
So, Chocolove's last name is Ashley's last name.
It's Miss... spelled. It's missing an N.
Because this is Japanese. This is how you were supposed to say your
Makadaru.
Yes, that is what you had to use in Japanese class, Ashley. I think I actually had to use it because you were just calling it Maksan, right?
Oh, yeah. Eventually they were like, that's too hard.
I had to write that a lot because, like, I would have to, like, in Japanese class, write about, like, there'd be questions that I like mention my girlfriend, whatever. And I always remembered, like, the way I had to remember it was because we would have examples in Japanese class about McDonald's, the restaurant. And that was, but that was translated in Japanese slightly differently than Makudanaru. And because we'd be like Makudanaru or something. It also changed the, like, the ru sound. We're going to, for the listeners, record what the stickers sound like so you can really fully appreciate.
Yeah.
Ashley, stop making noises. You're disturbing the sticker. They really need to hear the sticker.
Okay. But forget to invite Magnamon because no one remembers to invite Magnamon.
It's true.
Who are we talking about again?
Magnamon.
Who?
That was the joke, Jeff.
Wow, Jeff, you fell for it.
The connection's bad. I'm sorry.
It's not like he's a royal knight or anything.
Yeah. My headcanon is that he starred the Royal Knights because he felt snubbed. He was like, I didn't get invited to the party. I'm going to found Royal Knights just to crush them.
Okay. The epilogue then murders your hopes and dreams of
marauding.
Like Marauders Map.
I know what marauding is.
You clearly didn't expect the word there.
Well, I messed up the word before it, so then it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, bye. I mean, that's a difficult word.
The epilogue then murders your hopes and dreams by... Shut up, Jeffrey.
I'll mute myself, okay. Hey, Izzy's mom wasn't there. She's important.
She brings them PB&J sandwiches, yo.
Without the crust.
Yes.
Did they actually show those?
No, because it wasn't.
Oh, well, yeah.
It was Japanese food. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was in a bento. Food, though.
Yeah, but it wasn't PB&J. It was in a bento.
I thought she brought, like, something super secret weapon or something.
No. Just
hopes
food.
And dreams?
Yeah.
Ramen.
Well, technically it could be PB&J sandwiches.
I wouldn't put PB&J sandwiches in a bento.
You could.
You could.
Well, not that kind of bento. Maybe a smaller one.
PB&J bento.
I don't know if PB&J is, like, a thing in Japan.
To the internet.
Why wouldn't it?
Why wouldn't it be? I mean, it's just, like, not...
Culture?
Yeah. I feel like it's... I've never seen it.
Well, technically, sandwiches wouldn't be Japanese culture either.
I can't believe I'm on a Wikipedia page for peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
I'm fairly sure it's an American staple.
Peanut butter to...
I just looked it up. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in Japan is the first thing that came up. American foods the Japanese just don't like.
Oh. Well then.
Oh, snaps, Japan.
First thing that popped up.
Throwing down.
I can't read this Japanese Wikipedia article.
Because it's in Japanese, I assume.
Solid deductive skills. You should be Ken.
Would you like to tell us your favorite character, Jeffrey?
The peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Japan just, like, doesn't like peanut butter, period.
No.
Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, snaps! Jeffrey can never go there now.
Yeah, I mean, let's just cancel my... I don't want to say love. Let's just cancel my like of Japan now. I mean, we can just be done with that.
Maybe I'll be safe there.
Do they not have, like, Reese's peanut butter cups? Like, what do they do?
Here, watch. Look, this is from that article I just sent you.
Wait, Andrew, did they have, like, Reese's peanut butter cups? I need to know.
You think I remember?
Right there! Look, check the Slack!
Oh, snaps!
Oh, Tofugu, I trust that site.
2012.
I was not paying attention to American brands when I was in Japan, except Sprite, because I always wanted Sprite for some reason.
Why is there a Skrillex song in the chat room?
Because you said, what is light?
Why do Skrillex songs just appear in the chat room?
And then I said, where is laughter? What is light? Where is laughter? Confused in the sky.
Well, okay, it makes sense they don't like root beer, because root beer is gross, and, like, Americans are disgusting for liking it.
That's cool. Disgusting. I like root beer.
How rude. Wait,
so it's only two sandwiches. It's only two food ends here?
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's a short article.
Did you know that according to a 2002 survey, the average American will have eaten 1,500 PB&J sandwiches before graduating high school?
I believe it.
I don't.
That sounds low to me.
I should get a sound clip of Naruto saying believe it.
Please don't. Please don't.
That's a Jeff Nimoyism. I mean, it wasn't his idea, but he did that dub, so.
No.
No.
Okay, general discussion. What would you like to discuss, Jeffrey?
I never have anything to discuss in general discussion.
Yes.
You never have anything to discuss in general discussion. Is that what you just said?
A little bit.
Do you remember the time that general discussion had like 10 topics that were all you?
I don't think that was the worst, though.
You're probably right, but that's what I remember, because I remember looking at it and just seeing this wall of blue text.
I'm thinking the worst was the first episode of season 2, when we, like, stepped episode by episode.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bad. Well, that was awful.
That's bad. We're never doing that again, guys.
Do what?
Like, do the thing where we looked at every episode one by one, and it took, like, 2 hours to get through just the general discussion.
Yeah.
Because it was awful.
Things like that, I'm, like, afraid. Like, I don't want to listen to our first season stuff. Like, I'm like, oh, it's going to be
painful. We didn't do that in first season.
Oh, no, but I know. But, like, that's, like, it's a similar feeling. Like, there are different reasons, different things. I'm like, ugh.
Whatever.
Don't want to touch season one.
Or maybe I could do it now. Are we discussing it later?
I don't think so.
Oh, yes, okay. I am. You didn't put my topic in the notes, so I had to do it myself.
Which one? Connection?
Yes!
What does that even mean?
I'll get there.
Calm thyself.
I wouldn't say it's a metaphor for puberty so much as it's a specific...
You're welcome.
No, I'm mad at you now. Okay. I'm trying to talk for like 2 minutes.
No, you can't.
She's a lady.
She's a lady.
Sophisticated lady who's...
She doesn't
reveal her age.
Certain things. She doesn't, though.
I'm just imagining a fanfic of Digimon in Downton Abbey now. I'm sure it exists.
I'm not sure it exists. It should, though.
Let's test this.
Downton Abbey Digimon? Are you looking it up?
Yes.
Let's do it.
I don't find anything.
Aw, sad.
It's always giving me links of, like, websites that have Downton Abbey banners and have Digimon content, vice versa.
I'm looking up Digimon crossovers on fanfiction.net. Pokemon is the top.
Shocking.
Naruto is the second. Followed by Harry Potter. Kingdom Hearts has 36.
Who was Ansem in it?
I don't know. I'm not looking up all of them. What am I looking for?
Darkness.
There is no Downton Abbey crossover on fanfiction.net. But there is Spectacular Spider-Man.
Wait, are you looking Digimon with Kingdom Hearts?
I wrote down Digimon crossover. And the first result was Digimon crossovers on fanfiction.net.
I was hoping it was Downton Abbey crossed with Kingdom Hearts.
Here, I'm gonna link it. I could look up Downton Abbey crossovers if you want. Downton Abbey crossovers. Let's go. There are not nearly as many, and the top one is Doctor Who with 24.
Well, that's not... That's like... There's no inspiration behind that.
There's also Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Cthulhu Mythos. Game of Thrones! All right.
Wow, I can't Here, believe there are only two reboot
link you that one
crossovers.
Too.
Ooh, Attack on Titan.
That's not surprising.
With what?
With
Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey? Okay, I do have to look at that one.
It says one, but then the page is empty.
You are correct. I don't know why that maybe they deleted it.
Oh, no, sad.
It was too good to exist.
That's the saddest.
Titanic? That's just, I guess that makes sense.
NCIS.
Downton Abbey and the
M-rated
Hunger Games.
Entries are not displayed by default. Hold on.
It was an M-rated Attack on Titan Downton Abbey crossover?
Let's find out.
Oh, man. Oh, snaps.
How do I expand my... because I'm not logged in. Hold on.
It is an M-rated.
You logged in? You found it?
Let me filter it out. Yeah. Here, wait a second.
Oh, my God. Are we going to read it?
Out loud right now?
No. Oh, it only has one chapter.
It's just a cast... No? Oh, it does only have one chapter. Okay.
It was only published a month ago.
Okay, so I guess there's potential for it to continue.
Potential.
This is too many words.
Chapter one.
Too many
chapter
words.
One, what the shit?
Well, at least they understand exactly what they're doing. They are fully self-aware. Okay, well, let's at least read the summary. It says, Mr. Gross, he's been... Anna trailed off, her hands gripping more tightly and her trembling becoming more violent than before. He's... He's been eaten. Has he really? Well, quite an education for a gardener, I must say. What house? Perhaps I can write some references for... No, your lordship, not eaten. The group brought their attention back to Anna. Eaten, as in devoured. It makes more sense when you can actually see what you're reading. Eaton is also in school.
Oh, God.
This is amazing.
The show notes are no longer safe for work.
Nothing is sacred in this world.
And I'm glad for it.
Just like the ending of O2.
There's a review that says, "Oh my God, I am dying with laughter." I can't just see it all so perfectly. I think that's a typo.
I don't know enough about Downton Abbey.
So the final line of the chapter is, "And Julia frowned, what the shit?"
Who is Julia?
I don't know
enough about Downton Abbey for this.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem. I don't know anything about Downton Abbey.
Just imagine people in British accents.
I mean, I've seen a couple episodes, but it was in, like, season 5, and I didn't understand what was going on, and I don't know anybody's name.
Yeah, I've seen a couple episodes of season 1, and I don't recognize any of these names, but I also don't know the names, so that doesn't help. Okay. I guess that was enough of a diversion.
What were we talking about?
Wait, there's Digimon Homestuck.
Of course there is.
That doesn't surprise me.
Digi-stuck.
Yeah, I have come up with certain...
Of course you have.
Yeah, I didn't write it, but like...
Why did we want Downton Abbey crossover?
I don't know. I don't remember anymore.
What is happening?
We were talking about... Oh, because Gatomon's a lady.
Is that really why?
Yeah. Yes. And then Jeff brought up Downton Abbey.
Okay. I'm done.
Okay.
We're done. We're leaving.
We don't need to discuss any of our actual topics.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Thank you.
No.
Fine. Don't thank you.
Sorry, I'm possessed by a dark spore. I'm mean to everyone.
Ooh, Ashley, I just found your junior prom dress.
Yeah, Jeffrey, you're in the closet.
I'm just saying, I just noticed it.
Okay.
Next to the Attack on Titan jacket.
Yeah, I mean, they go together.
Hockey?
Oh, he says, "I have my friends, my family, and my Digimon, of course."
Davis totally reminds me...
What?
What?
Change approved!
It's kind of cut off.
Change your what?
Change approved, because Ashley updated her.
Change approved!
Okay.
It's from Cougar Town. In Cougar Town, they have a lot of like rules for dynamics in their social group, and then they'll be like, "We need to change this rule." So then,
okay, let's move on.
That's very interesting.
Can I say something?
No.
Can you tell Jeffrey to stop using sound clips now? Yes. Jeffrey's falling asleep.
I'm like very zoomed in on the conversation. Like I'm imagining like we're in, like but like I don't know where to connect. I sound drunk.
Kinda.
I've never been drunk.
Never?
I try like once. Work.
Well, this is not the topic for right now.
This is the saddest conversation.
I don't want to.
Okay, then don't. Oh my God, have I been talking this whole time and you couldn't hear me?
Yes.
I'm so upset now.
We'll hear it on the recording.
Yeah, but now you don't know what I'm talking about.
It's like that episode of Yu-Gi-Oh! Where Yugi switches back and forth to fight Pegasus. I almost said Pegasusmon, and...
I'm definitely not on a Yu-Gi-Oh! Wiki right now.
Try again.
No, that's in a couple weeks.
I heard a bad noise.
Yeah, we lost Ash.
No! Do you have a hurricane?
No. Wait, did you ask if there was a hurricane?
It's not hurricane season.
I don't know when hurricane season is.
It is definitely not in March.
There are no seasons here. I'm not used to seasons.
I mean, there's barely any season in Florida, but hurricane season is not in March.
That's very delightful. No, I already said that. That's very engaging.